This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Roll the hi-hats. It's time for Weekend Confirmed, everybody. I'm Garnet Lee. Glad you are here for this, late January pre-Super Bowl PlayStation 4. Oh, my God!
Oh, wow. Sorry about your ears, everybody.
Yeah, there was an announcement or something? Or an announcement of an announcement?
There's an announcement of an announcement coming on February 20th. Oh, my God!
Those are the best.
Anyway, so we might talk about that. My friends are here with me, Jeff Cannata.
Very excited about PlayStation 4.
I know, right? It's hard to be excited. And indie Jeff Mattis.
Yes, PlayStation 4. I'll believe that when I see it.
What's a PlayStation 4?
To play games with.
Playing, stupid.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. Like, I get it. That's funny. And Nicole's here.
Hi.
Because everybody loves her.
Yeah.
Really, she's here because we need her insight into the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you guys are place bets basically on what I say.
We do.
A lot of money.
All our prop bets.
A lot of money.
Yes.
Are you recommending parlays today?
Yes. Yes.
Love it.
Do you have any you like?
No.
Oh.
Yes. But no.
All right. That's fair enough. That was kind of too inside.
I was listening to all the fun prop bets on the radio this morning.
What are your favorites?
Obviously, like how long the national anthem is going to be.
And so sure.
The over-under is 2 minutes.
Oh, God. What's wrong with people? Oh,
Alicia Keys. So, you know, she might be stretching
it out.
Is she
going to lip-sync it? I don't know. How much money are you going to put on that?
I know who's winning the bet for being the biggest homophobic jackass award, though.
I know. That makes me embarrassed.
What did I miss?
They already apologized. And
yeah, I know, but...
what's his name? The corner...
cornerback.
What's his name?
I can't remember.
Culver. Yeah. Said he doesn't want to play with...
It better just get out of the locker room. Blah blah blah.
I mean, I'm not going to defend him because that was a stupid fucking thing to say, and he's a jackass, like you said. But he was saying it on what's his name's radio show, and it's like the atmosphere of
they're all a bunch of
So anyway,
yeah,
I don't even want to give any credence to that.
So, you ever thought about video games?
I guess.
I guess.
What's I guess that? We're not going to talk about the Super Bowl right now.
We'll talk about the Super Bowl later. We'll talk about the Super Bowl later, I promise, okay? And by the way, everyone, I would really like to thank... This week, I got a couple of really nice messages from folks who like the show.
You say it like it's such a rarity.
Well, that actually take the time to like send me like a personal message and everything. Like usually it's like, oh, you guys didn't do this or that sucked or whatever. Like it was really nice to get a couple of like really nice complimentary... fan feedback thing.
Yeah.
So I like that. And they really like the format. Jeff, you've hit a winner.
Yay.
I try to hit as many things as I can. So
now
I've hit a winner. I do my best.
Well done, sir. So I'll kick it off. And I'm definitely going to talk about Ni No Kuni because it's what I've been playing. And I love me some Ni No Kuni. And when I want to talk about it, but I can't resist this PlayStation thing.
Okay.
I mean, this PlayStation announcement is a little bit nonsense. And I'm kind of baffled by it. We're still just sort of, this is Thursday evening. We're reacting to it literally.
Building the hype.
20 minutes after it happened.
It's building the hype, bro.
Right. Last day of
hype
January.
Train.
Hype needs to be built.
Yeah.
They didn't build the hype train
aboard.
In a day.
Choo-choo!
So they're building a 29-day hype train for potentially the future of the PlayStation brand.
Traditionally, how has Sony announced consoles in the past? I just don't remember.
With a hype train.
All aboard.
Well, in the early days, it was the hype telegraph.
Yeah. Yeah. Hypogram.
Yeah. Hype smoke singles.
Yeah. Hype horses.
Hype pigeons.
Yeah. Hype pigeons.
Well, there's been a lot of back and forth. So for those who are still catching up, the Sony has sent out a sort of announcement on the PlayStation blog that on February 20th, they'll be announcing or showing... They'll be showing a glimpse of the future of PlayStation.
And then they had like a snazzy electrified PlayStation video that was nothing more than some swirling cymbals and some
music. Very important symbols.
It was shapes.
Shapes.
It was the iconic four PlayStation button, controller button,
which, you know,
triangle, circle, square, X
certainly indicates that it is at a more fundamental level than just a game announcement.
I agree.
It is a
shape announcement. It is a hexagon.
Platform. Octagon?
They're adding the dodecahedron. Yeah.
I think that it's likely the next evolution of Move is what they're announcing.
It's a PS Vita Go.
It's called the Move On.
Yeah. Oh, I see what you did there. They've entered the fifth dimension. They now have a time controller. But seriously, I think that it almost. They didn't come out and say it, but it almost has to be the next hardware.
If it's not, what a letdown.
Exactly. How would you like to be the product manager for anything else? Like, I know y'all are here for the exciting next future of PlayStation. I want to show you our new music and entertainment system.
No, it's, you know what it is?
Wonder Library.
It's like, I'm sorry we got everybody riled up. We're just announcing the new slogan. It's
suck us. Yeah.
Now it's play all the time. That's what we're announcing.
So here's my thing is that while in the moment of today, at the end of January 2013, yeah, they've got a bunch of excitement. They got a bunch of enthusiasm, but they're getting a bunch of enthusiasm at the end of January 2013. There's nothing else happening. There's nothing really getting attention. It's sort of a weird thing to me because the launch of a console, the reveal of the PlayStation 4 is something to me that could own a much bigger media space. And I think there may be,
They're carving out their own media space. I think that's what
they're going for, the Apple approach, right?
Right. That's what companies do now. They don't announce big things at a place where anybody else is. They don't try to own moments that can possibly be.
That's true.
You know,
that's true.
Unfocused on them. They just create their own moments.
That's true. Other than Apple, I don't know how many people it's worked well for. Microsoft with, you know, the Surface launches has struggled to make.
Right.
That
well,
is big
but,
a thing.
I mean, Google does it now and Samsung does it now.
You're not convincing me that any of these guys have been really successful at it.
I don't understand what your argument is. You think it's a bad strategy because you think they should be at where we're already excited about games anyway, like a GDC or an E3?
Because they are. So look, if you're talking about new hardware, you're definitely talking about marketing to the core gamer crowd, right? And
well,
you're going to get
this day and age. This hardware is supposed to be
at least in
entertainment.
The at least
center.
Your first marketing push.
You would
be
think
core gamers.
You would think.
I mean, they're going to be paying attention to that's the whole point of releasing an announcement for an announcement,
right?
Is like, get excited about this date. We're carving it out. We're going to own this date.
And so that's my other point about it is that they only I guess there's probably PR people who spend a lot of time mapping out like what's the ideal amount of time to make the reveal between now and when the reveal is going to happen. How, you know, what day do you announce? I mean, sure, there was a very practiced reason that they did it on a Thursday afternoon on the PlayStation blog. But that does also seem a little random.
They were totally trying to steal GTA 5 hype.
Well, and GTA 5's announcement is also
Suspicion City.
I was being a little snarky, but I think it's entirely possible we'll get a hardware announcement soon. But I don't think they're going to start talking about anything that'll be playable on it for a while because there's still so many unreleased titles that are PS3.
But
you
don't
know,
you think?
But not really.
Don't you think the whole timing of the announcement is to be before GDC, so the GDC they can talk
hardware
more specifically?
Yeah. No, I think that it goes back to what we thought once upon a day was going to be the plan, which was GDC hardware, E3 software, fall launch.
Right.
And yeah. I suppose they're back on that train. There's been a lot of waffling, though. There's been a lot of thought of like what's going on. I mean, look, we know dev kits have been out. We don't know it, but you know, based on the volume of rumors and the old "where there's smoke, there's fire" thing,
yeah,
it seems that dev kits have been out to at least some group of developers for at least going on probably 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there is definitely ramp from that for there to have thinking they've been probably pre-prototyping prior to that. They do a strong push, you know, first round of software this fall. Okay, I could see that happening. But it is interesting that Grand Theft Auto moved to September.
It's weird. Fuse got pushed back too, and those are and so did Splinter Cell. Those are both August. I think GTA is actually the farthest in the year announcement we have. I don't think we have any games that are confirmed October, November.
Which points to new hardware.
Absolutely.
And I
We didn't have that much announced for November. Like last year, we didn't have that much announced for November, December either.
We had Battlefield teases. We have Call of Duty teases. I mean, there's always some fall teases.
Actually, Battlefield's whole teaser event last year was
March.
It was pre GDC time.
Yeah.
Or
I thought it was February. But anyway, but we didn't know about it yet.
Yeah. I feel like we knew more at this point last year than we do now, but maybe I'm making that up.
I feel like that too, though.
Yeah.
And then didn't Sony say a few weeks ago that they're going to not release their hardware until Xbox goes first so they can kind of build off of what's out there? That happened, right? Nod your heads.
Take anything you hear with a grain
right,
of salt.
Right, but it happened. And so I'm wondering if that was a misquote or that was trying to...
Look, this is a very big game of chicken.
Do we
right
get
now.
Them both this year then? Do we get them?
It's a very big game of chicken.
The Durango and the Orbis?
That's a great question. I think that Microsoft.
It sounds like you need to see a doctor if you get both of those. Yeah. I got a Durango and the Orbis.
Oh. Side effects may include Durango, Orbis.
Yeah. What I was going to raise during my segment was this idea that does potential new hardware in the fall, let's say November, make a mid-September GTA 5 seem... I don't think it hurts GTA. It could. But does it hurt the consoles in any way? Like, it's such a big game in such a later than we thought it was going to come.
Oh, I think it absolutely hurts new consoles. Now the core, the first batch of people that are going to buy hardware will buy the hardware regardless of what's out, whatever.
Right.
But in terms of the person who's like, I want to play the next new big thing and the next new big things on my current gen system. And unless we see some just mind-blowing announcements that can compete with that, you know, the level of hype that follows a GTA game.
Yeah.
That could be a bad move for them.
The install base is just too big for Xbox 360 that even the next Call of Duty game can't be just next gen. It'll have to.
Oh, yeah, it won't be.
Even if next-gen consoles come out in November, I can see a ton of games coming out on
both. This November's Call of Duty
will be a
current, right-now generation game.
But
absolutely.
It also be the next-gen, too? Like, will they at least
well,
two versions?
Call of Duty 2 was.
It.
Well, they might be in concurrent development right now.
Yeah.
Like, two, you know.
I mean, I think that's...
I think that based off the... Now, if we're going to talk about, like, burrow into, like, individual franchises, with where that engine is, I think that it would behoove Activision to take Call of Duty for a next-gen and make that the time that they finally do a new engine. They need a new engine.
Oh, I agree.
That game needs a new engine.
Well, what's to say that they aren't doing that right now?
Because I don't think they would simultaneously track that with a game in the old engine. They wouldn't do same game, two different engines.
Oh, no. I think, but maybe, you know... The title that's on current gen systems is already further along in development.
Well, yeah, it
and,
has to be.
And the other one, but the other one's in development. It's just like they're figuring out what the specs are going to be and or how they're getting adjusted so they can, you know, build this thing with final.
It's going to be really hard.
Like Frostbite 2 is built for whatever the next generation is, but they're still putting games out now on it.
Yes. So. Because they're scalable. I don't know. I just think it's going to be an interesting challenge to see how many games, because this obviously programming to a much higher degree of, you know, much higher art resources are needed, much more that you can do with the console. So it means the demands on the teams are going to be even greater. And now you're going to get ready for a launch cycle. Could be really tough. I don't know. It's gonna be really interesting. There's no reason for us to like speculate on it anymore right now.
Yeah.
We will know more in 3 short weeks.
Which is why we needed an announcement for the announcement, bro.
I know. And I'm excited about that. I just thought, like, I don't know. We all want to know. All right. We have to take a quick little break for our sponsor. When we come back on the other side, I want to talk about some Ni No Kuni. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. For Weekend Confirmed listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service for 30 days. One audiobook you might consider is A Memory of Light, Wheel of Time, Book 14 by Robert Jordan and Brandon Sanderson, narrated by Michael Kramer and Kate Reading. Now, since 1990, that's 1990 when Robert Jordan started this whole Wheel of Time series, it burst onto the world with that first book, The Eye of the World. Now, listeners have been anticipating the final scenes of this extraordinary saga, which has sold over 40 million copies in 32 languages. And if you're looking to catch up, well, why not do it on an audiobook where you can listen in your car, on the road, wherever you might be? The Wheel of Time turns, ages come and pass. What was what will be and what is may yet fall under the shadow. Let the dragon ride again on the winds of time. That's A Memory of Light, Wheel of Time, book 14, available now on audible.com. You can use our special promotion. It is audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. That's audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. All right, now, one thing you don't have to wait any longer for, which has been a long enough wait already, is Ni No Kuni.
Yeah.
And, you know, having been skeptical about the long time that it took to get here, and also some of what we'd heard, and I don't know, I was trying to go back and look, and I wish I'd had more time to look. Am I alone in having gotten the sense that the response from Japan on the game was that it was cute, but a little RPG light, like a little bit unfulfilling or a little unsatisfying?
I don't know about that. It was definitely a muted response from Japan as far as enthusiasm. I think Famitsu gave it a lowish score.
But it's weird because now you look at the response in the West and everybody is falling over themselves to praise it. And I can see why. It is. You're talking about new consoles. There's definitely something to be said for the art and character style of it being animated. Of it being animated, making it, you know, not the kind of tour de force for visuals like, you know, like a 3D processor would do. But man, the game is so pretty. Mm-hmm. It is phenomenally pretty. It's the colors, the richness, the saturation, the characters, the music on top of that, the music is freaking phenomenal. It's symphonic. It was all done by the Tokyo Symphony Orchestra. It's just gorgeous, so soaring and so evocative. And it's just, I love this game.
Now, here's my question to you. Do you love this game because you are about 5 to 10 hours in, or because everybody that I've heard from that has played it
14 hours in actually now.
Okay. Well, anybody that I've heard that's played it really, really long has come away much more negative than the first impression.
Because you don't really beat it until like 40, 45 hours.
Right. And also, from what I understand, it gets super grindy and super difficult and brutally unfair. You know, you get these like one hit kill guys. That's really, honestly, after all my enthusiasm, especially after when Jeff and I saw it in Vegas and I was just falling over myself with it.
No, it looked awesome.
Amazing. Yeah. And I love the art style and everything. And I love Japanese role-playing games, but I just didn't want to put myself through that.
Yeah, so here's the thing of Ni No Kuni. It's on the surface of it, this beautiful, whimsical, if you will.
Yeah, everybody keeps saying, Jeff, you got to play it. It's whimsy. It's Studio Ghibli, which is, you know.
It very much strikes that same vibration that a Disney film does,
sure.
Right? And the game mechanic part of it actually has some lovely, very fun RPG mechanics to play in it. So,
and Nicole, you should be freaking out because it's Pokemon, right?
Yeah,
it's basically Pokemon.
Oh,
I can argue with all.
I played it in Japan during Tokyo Game Show, and I think it was in English, but not that it really matters.
You think it was in English?
I can't really remember. But I just didn't really enjoy the gameplay. I think I like turn-based when it comes to like Pokemon because it's formulaic and like I know it. But I just found
so it is sort of turn-based.
Yeah,
it is sort of turn-based, but with an opportunity for you to do movements within the play. So let's like back up a little bit. Ni No Kuni is the story of Oliver, who's a young man who. Who's orphaned early in the game.
God, that was a guess.
Spoiled.
That was a guess.
Oh.
Yeah. Oliver Twist. I don't know. That was just...
I think that language is on the box.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
And he gets pulled through into another world to save the world from some dark sorcery, basically. Kind of classic, you know, sort of good versus evil, light versus dark Disney and anime and RPG fantasy. And in the other world, he becomes a magician. And one of the things that's really quite clever that I like quite a bit is one of the first things he finds is this magician's book. And the book, which was also, now I understand one of the reasons that the special collector's editions was awesome because it comes with a real version of the book. The book is a really well done way of giving you all the pieces of the lore at your pace. And it's really elegantly incorporated into the game in that you think at first, oh, wow, they're just dumping all this stuff on me. But you find out that, no, actually, your book in the game is incomplete and you're finding pages as you come across new spells, as you learn things in the world. And so it fills things in. And there's... I think they've struck a very good balance between the amount of, okay, I'm now going to tell you about this part of the world you're in and giving you enough information to go on, and then putting more in the inside the book if you want to go look at it. You don't have to. There's nothing that says you have to go do that, but you can go do that if you want to. And when you go on adventure in the world, it's really pretty, and it feels very classic because you have this big overworld that you're experiencing, and you know, you see all the enemies in the play field. But one of the things I thought was cool was as I started to level up, instead of the enemies coming to attack me, the ones who I would just overpower started to run away from me. So it's not mean, and I'm trying to think about how I'm going to address the grindy complaint, because I think that yes, there is a degree of adventuring that you need to do in each area. But the game is much like Final Fantasy XII in that it spoon feeds you all of the things that you would need to do also in order to be level equivalent to advance. If you're just critical pathing it, then you're missing a lot of the game. And the game intends that you will go in and take on these side missions. They have a classic, you know, classic role-playing game system of a bounty board. And so you go to, and there's two parts to it. One part is there'll be like a bounty board that's just like, hey, go talk to this person and find out what their complaint was that they needed some help with. And you go talk to them. And it's like they're missing something, or they need some help finding someone, or they have something that's tormenting their crops or whatever it might be. And so you go solve their problem. And this is really funny. Anyone who's been to Japan knows how much Japanese businesses love their loyalty cards. If you haven't been to Japan, you'll know this, but like, there's like Mr. Donut cards. There's like every place you go, there's cards with like punch cards. And so you get punch cards from the Adventuring Guild here. And as you do these side missions, you get punches filled out. And as each, you know, each tier of number of cards you turn in,
your 10th different... adventure is free.
No, you get stuff.
Like a sandwich.
So you can, yeah.
Or and each haircut.
And filled out stamped cards are good for, you know, you can stack them. So you could like trade in three and get something that's more valuable. Or like the first thing I did was I traded in two for an ability that gives me more of these little things called glints in combat. So let's talk about combat. So to address the combat question, Oliver very quickly finds that he has the ability to spawn forth familiars from his heart. The heart and emotions.
I've done that.
Heart and emotion plays like a big part of this game. So the dark forces affecting the other world, they've sapped different aspects of the population's heart. So you've got like, so let's say the first one you learn about, so I won't spoil anything. The first one you learn about is enthusiasm. And so Oliver has this ability through his vial he has to go and take a little enthusiasm from people who have extra enthusiasm and give it to people who've had their enthusiasm stolen by the Dark Lord. Hmm. And similarly,
I hate it when my enthusiasm is stolen. It makes me think of De Niro's speech in Untouchables. This says before he cracks it. When he's like, man is preeminent. He's expected to have enthusiasms.
Yeah.
Enthusiasms. Enthusiasms.
Enthusiasms.
One of mine? Oh, sorry. I won't go on.
Nicely done, Jeff.
He can pull, Oliver can pull familiars from the strength of his heart. And so the first one you get is this cute little mite. But the big part of the game, like you said, is very Pokemon-like in that you're going to be, you know,
training them up.
Gathering familiars and training them up. And you get stuff to feed them. And there's a whole little mini system in there of feeding them different things and not overfeeding them so they don't get weighed down, and helping them level up. And
making sure they have a well-balanced diet,
yeah.
Exercise, take
lots of enthusiasm.
Well, actually, all the things that help them are treats, like chocolate bars and salted ice cream and cupcakes.
Children.
And pies. Well, no, that's the familiars. The familiars, they get to eat all the good stuff.
Oh, okay.
And when you go into combat, then initially there's just you. You do gain party members as well. And you have the ability to either fight as yourself, Oliver, who can cast spells, or call your familiars in. And each of your familiars has different attributes and abilities. So it's a constant, very Pokemon-like mix and match of which familiar do I have that'll fight best in this situation right now, who can, you know, counter this person's attack or has an attack that they're vulnerable to or has the right affinity for elements, you know, like sun over moon or whatever. And the combat itself is, it looks like an action combat game at first because you're able to run around in the
around
field
like a madman. Yeah.
And that's important because, yeah, the attacks do have things like range effects and directionality, so you can avoid some attacks simply by getting out of range of your enemy. But at the same time, you're also working against a clock timer of when you can choose an action. So down at the left-hand corner, you'll have a bunch of actions for yourself. So you can say, cast a spell or attack. If you're Oliver, or you can attack or use one of your abilities or whatever. Now, once you choose which one you're going to do, then your character tries to do that for however long that series takes. So it's a spell, then he's gonna, you know, Oliver stops, he pulls out his spell book, he reads his spell and casts his spell, and you're stuck. Now, if you want to, you can cancel out of that, because you may want to move around, because moving around in the environment is important. Like I just said about how you can stay away from people. Mm-hmm. Also, as you hit your enemies, oftentimes they'll drop these things I was talking about called glints, which are great because they can be either health or mana increases, or like replenishers. So like as you're fighting, you don't necessarily have to go back to Oliver to heal, which because there's a lot of switching. The game expects you to really quickly pick up on the switching, mm-hmm. because the only way to heal early on, other than to pick up glints, is to switch back to Oliver and cast his healing spell. And so he's not going to be your strongest attacker. So you're switching out to like Might and then switching back to Oliver and healing, and switching to Lemur and using him to attack, and then coming back to Oliver, or switching between all these characters.
Now it sounds like all the characters sort of predefined in terms of what their advancement path is, or is it like other RPGs as of late where, you know, use this weapon or put, you know, equip them with this junk and they're going to, you know, naturally become magic users?
No, the familiars are who they are. So like, you know, you find the lemur familiar, and he's a lemur familiar who doesn't really defend well, but is good at evasion and has
classic
claw
attacks. Lemur.
I know, classic lemur,
it's
right?
It's a boomafoo right now.
Right? Oh.
No. All the boomafoo, right?
Zaboomafoo.
I know. I was just testing you.
I wasn't testing you.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. It all does sound familiar.
But the point of all this is that that's not a thin veneer of a game. That is, I mean, it's a game that really rewards you playing. There's even like a timing mechanic. So if you want to, you can babysit the attack command and wait until you see your opponent attack. And there's like a quick moment where you can get in a counterattack that stuns them and leaves them open to more attack.
So all that sounds awesome.
There's a really good attack system here. And yeah, I could definitely see how I've already seen in the times that I've transitioned three worlds or three areas that when you transition areas and go into a new area where it's suddenly hard again, it's hard.
Yeah.
Because action happens fast. You've got to really juggle. You've got to know your characters. You've got to know how to use them. You got to know what their strengths are. You're going to have to move in between them. And I freak it. Like, that's great. That's the really game rewarding part to go with all of the whimsy and fun that you get all the rest of the time.
That's great.
I'm happy for you.
Now, no. how much of it, like when you're battling enemies,
she's got your enthusiasm from your heart,
is similar to, say, Persona 4, which is about learning what all these, you know, what the weaknesses and strengths are, and like how much of that is sort of layered in the puzzle element of figuring out how best to defeat each enemy? Or is it sort of a...
It's not as Persona 4-y, because if you think about Persona 4, you are tapping into the power,
right?
And you're using it to cast spells, and here you are literally changing out. So, you know, like when you switch to your familiar, Oliver is standing at the edge of the... and he's not attacked, like he's invulnerable, and you're actually playing with the familiar that you've called out.
Okay.
It's still a much more fast paced sort of thing. Like most of your familiars still are very much, it's very much a matter of balancing out. When do I physically attack? When do I use a skill? When do I come back to Oliver and use his spells?
This sounds really interesting. I mean, back when Jeff and I played it at that event, I didn't experience half of this because it was a little time demo that was really super, but it sounds cool. So Jeff, the things you've been hearing is that people have been getting, you know, you get up to a point where you're running into these things that one hit kill you.
Yeah, that's kind of the things that deterred me. And you know, I'm sort of in a place where I don't have the bandwidth to take on a 50-hour game right now, which I really want to play this, but I just haven't been able to kind of go over that.
If you start it, you will chew it up.
I'm sure I will love it, but I definitely heard people saying, like, you know, you love it until you hate it, and then you hate it.
I would be surprised if you hate it permanently. I think it's because it's so sweet and so fun that when it slaps you, you're suddenly like, whoa, this game hasn't, that's weird. I didn't expect to be slapped around by this game.
Yeah. Maybe that's more about your personality, like a little slapping around.
Hey, dude, whatever you're into, man.
No, I'm not saying I'm worried about it being hard. I'm sure
you know
I'm
me. I don't actually like frustration,
but you know, I'm sure I'm getting the reputation of like, no, I just don't want it 'cause it's hard. No. It's not about that. It's that like, it's like, 30 hours in, you go, oh shit, I gotta go spend 5 hours doing something I don't want to do rather than progressing the story forward. And that just,
and that's the crux of what makes grinding on fun for me too, is the moment where you're like, okay, I need to kill X number of these dudes, you know, or I basically need to go out into this area that I've already made my way through. I'm already at the next checkpoint, but I can't get past this. It's like a dead end wall. So you're just basically like killing the same exact six creatures over and over
again. If the magic of the world wears off on me, then the bounty hunts and the things that you need to do to be leveling up in each level, in each area to move on, would become less fun. But for right now, because the world is so engaging and so whimsical and so fun and so clever that I'm really happy to go do those things. I'm not in a hurry to go do the next story mission because I'm having so much fun in the areas.
Now I gotta go buy it.
Well, I feel like everything, all the good things you're describing are a game that I would absolutely love. There's Pokemon elements and there's RPG elements and then there's elements that kind of sound like the latest Kingdom Hearts, the Kingdom Hearts 3DS or 3... What is
you
it?
Mean the combat?
Dream Drop Distance, I think?
The combat part.
Yeah, and the familiar parts, because they have familiars in this one. I feel like everything about it is set up so someone like me would want to play it, and there's just nothing about it that I want to play.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think it's because it just seems like such a task. It's a 40-hour game. People keep telling me
you love 40-hour games.
Yeah, but...
It's Skyrim. You play...
I'm at 230 in that game.
Yeah, so what the
but
hell?
But I don't know. There's just something about this game that I don't want to put that time commitment into. It just seems like too much of a challenge. I know is the wrong answer.
No, it's not. There's not a right or wrong answer.
If you're having fun, I want fun, but I just don't want to play it.
Well,
Have you seen Princess Mononoke?
No.
Oh.
Or any
Studio Ghibli stuff?
The more recent stuff that they did the American versions of, like...
Spirited Away and like...
Secret World of
Would it help to know that you have a sidekick who looks like a drop of snot wearing pants called Mr. Drippy, who speaks with Mr. Scott's...
That actually goes in the other direction for me.
It's a Welsh accent.
Oh, it is.
Yes.
Because I keep on expecting him to go, "Ah, Oliver, laddie, beat me up."
Yeah, oh no, I know. He's got a little lantern on his
nose. Yep, he's got a lantern on his nose,
yeah.
Oh, see, I played a demo with him, and he sucked. I kept dying. Well,
Mr. Drippy is the fairy prince of the fairy princes.
Well, when you put it that way.
I just wish there wasn't an MMO in my life right now, because I could jump into
I was going to say, you're almost to the end of Terra, right?
I really am almost to the end of Terra.
Are you really?
Yeah, we're level 55.
So does it
end?
And now it's finally free, and I'll be like, oh, I can play. Oh,
if you can get a level cap with us, then hang out.
Anyway, I think the Ni No Kuni is amazing, and all of my concerns about it being, you know, not as rewarding on the game side as it was on the emotional atmospheric side are so far completely unfounded. It's really rewarding. It's a really fun game to play.
I'll buy it. God damn it, Garnet. I'll buy it. Jesus.
You're making me drop.
Jesus.
Let him hit 60 first, guys.
Ugh.
But you're going to love it. Jeff, you will love this game.
I'm buying it. Jesus.
You win.
Let me ask you a question.
Here's my checkbook.
What I wanted
to ask you a question. Are you buying it?
Peer pressure at work, kids.
So you're going to use my Amazon affiliate link, right?
Okay. Hey, so let me ask you a question. Are we technically in the second segment? Should we be
not in a second? I get to finish this because this is the part of this I want to talk about.
Oh, go ahead.
Go,
I just want to make sure
go.
That Nicole gets to talk about.
I want to talk about the like Disney animation, which appeals to everyone. Like Disney animation appeals to everybody, right? Like we call like you can
well,
still
this isn't technically Disney animation, but yes,
but I mean, it's of a similar vein, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here playing this game, and I'm thinking to myself.
What is the deal?
What determines how adults respond to this sort of thing, a la Disney?
It's how much enthusiasm is in their heart.
Charles Schulz's Peanuts' stuff, The Grinch, or a game like this.
It's nostalgia.
Versus
weird grouping there, but go ahead.
I mean, I'm thinking about cartoons that are cute and sweet, not South Park, not Futurama. Right. You know, I get how those click.
Okay.
But these ones that are still like.
I see what you're saying.
Treading on that whole like childlike nature of them and yet still have this like really strong appeal to us as adults.
Like The Muppet Show, except that's not animated.
But not animated.
But
same
it's the
thing.
Same thing.
It's you are right. It's the same thing.
Mm. Where does Adventure Time fit into that?
I think it straddles that line because it's because it's
making bacon pancakes.
I love that shit. Because Adventure Time is both childlike and innocent, but it's also wry and ironic and meta.
It's really dark too.
Yeah, I mean, but kids don't get it.
Sure,
kids don't get that. Yeah, I think it's one of those that weirdly straddles the line. But I see what you're saying that that
it can be childlike without being childish.
I mean, this is an interesting conversation to relate to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago or recently with the Disney Infinity, you know, where it's like ostensibly a kid's product, but certainly has appeal to a certain type of adult. And you're trying to determine what type of adult that is or why it is.
I'm just trying. Like, I was just curious. I was thinking to myself as I was sitting here playing it and like in like this really semi-euphoric state of just like loving it and thinking to myself, you know, this is exactly the sort of stuff that I picture the person who stereotypes games as kid stuff walking by and going, well, I can't believe a grown man sitting there playing that. And it makes me wonder, but then I think to myself, like,
did you ever watch?
I love all these.
Did
things.
You ever watch a Pixar movie and like it? Shut up, then. Like that's. I mean, you know what I mean? Because they're probably the best at it, right? Like,
sure.
Like doing the whole appeals to everyone.
Well, I don't know. I still like the hand animated Disney stuff. But you're saying for like
In terms of multiple hitting multiple audiences multiple in very audiences. Real ways, like you know, at the same time.
What is it about it that connects? I don't know. Maybe it's just a rhetorical question. Even I just. There's something about it that works so well for me. Is it that I am, you know, reliving childhood, you know, emotions?
I feel
is
like
it
there
that
has to be some connection to that? Because when you're younger, cartoons are your life. Everything you watch is cartoon. Everything is animated. Everything is colorful.
Yeah.
So I mean, there has to be some type of psychological like drawback to your childhood when you're liking these type of games and TV shows. And like, if I still watch Disney shows or Disney movies, like. I love those as a child, and there's still something there, right?
Yeah. And we talked about Zelda last week, and Zelda, I think, has the same thing. Obviously, Wind Waker coming back, Wind Waker really is in the same vein of, like, here's this beautifully, you know, cartoon-like atmosphere, very also, you know, childlike, remembrances of, like, being a kid, playing games, and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah, I think what you're talking about...
they're still so engaging. Like, that's the other thing, is, like, Ni No Kuni is not a game that a kid... quote unquote could play. I mean, because it's not easy to play.
Right. And I don't know if it's as much about aesthetic as you're making it out to be. I think it has more to do with theme, and that is this fairy tale.
Yeah.
You
know,
that's
a good point. The fairy tale nature of it.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of those things that you've referenced draw on these very universal ideas of fairy tale and
like the first big world that you're in, or area that you're in, you're helping a giant cat king.
Of course, yes.
And it's awesome. And he fights a giant purple mouse called Hickory Dickory.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool.
It's very clever, like all that. And you're right. So that's I'm relating that because that really does bring out that fairy tale nature of it. And we do love a fairy tale, right? We love the imagination of it.
Yeah, it connects to a very, you know, primal state in us.
But I think that the beauty of it, and maybe what it comes down to is that the reason that a Studio Ghibli or a Disney succeed at these things is because they're the few who have actually mastered the very deft touch of tapping into that very pure fantasy of the fairy tale and getting it right without it becoming, you know, colored by, oh, well, someone stuck in something stupid, or someone stuck in something that didn't fit, or someone tried too hard to make an innuendo.
Yeah, or, it's been
like our show.
There's so many places where you can miss.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, exactly. See, there's so many places where you can miss, right? It's so easy to just roll off the cliff and have, like something like this, I can see so many ways that someone could have tried to do this just missed.
I think some of it is that art, you know, people that are making art for children sometimes, not always, but underestimate how smart kids are. And so they make this lowest common denominator like stuff that, I mean, kids are bright. I mean, they're, you know.
Except for the stupid ones.
Yeah. They're dumb.
Anyway, I couldn't be happier with this game.
Buying it.
It makes me happy.
All right.
I'm going to pass.
It's beautiful. It's like a little flower in the meadow. Sparkling in the sun.
All right. You're talking about glints. Go ahead.
With a little dew on the
moving on.
Petals.
This is getting weird.
We're moving
everybody.
On.
All right. Moving right along, I guess we'll give the mic to Nicole.
Yeah, hook it up.
Oh, am I talking about what I'm playing now, or am I?
Whatever you want, girl. It's
just freestyle, whatever.
It's rap. It's your show right now.
Okay, well, I'll get to what I want to talk about. Before that, I wanted to say I'm playing KOTOR right now because nothing else is really like got me interested. I don't really feel like...
Oh, that's weird. I don't want to play a 40-hour game that is a role-playing game.
It's 10 hours in, and I just got a lightsaber.
Yeah.
What? Why did anyone tell me about that?
So, I don't. You just literally just...
Yeah, so I
contradicted
bought...
everything you've just said.
But no, it's Star Wars. You don't need to. You don't need to sell me on Star Wars. I've had KOTOR since like a Steam sale like 2.5 years ago, and I just haven't played.
This is the first one.
Uh huh. Mm. And I just missed SWTOR so much that I started playing KOTOR, and it just it's so.
If only there were other tours that you could be playing.
There's only one other than this.
Yeah. Like, do you just ride around in your car because it has a motor?
No. Oh, it does, though.
Wait. Oh, sorry. That's
Lotro. Oh, my God. You are such a hater.
I was playing Lotro, though.
Oh, Lotro. Yeah, that's a little different.
I'm a big fan of acronyms.
Anyway, go
YOLO.
Ahead. Talk about KOTOR.
YOLO.
YOLO. Whatever.
YOLO.
You know YOLO, right?
So I got a blue lightsaber because I'm a guardian.
Of course.
I mean, obs. No, I just want to say that I really am enjoying this game, and it's super BioWare. And
totes my goats.
It's totes BioWare, and it feels like, why did they have to make SWTOR an MMO? Couldn't they have just made that like a single-player experience? And, like, made a lot
I bet
more
there's
money?
Somebody in their office going, yeah, we probably should have done that.
Because they're so similar, and they kind of look very similar.
Well, that was the whole point, man. It was like, hey, people love this. Let's
yeah,
make it then charge
like
them a monthly 10, fee for 12 it.
12 years apart. You think that's supposed
to be Nicole, you don't understand.
Advanced.
Star Wars The Old Republic is KOTOR 3 and 4
and
5
and 6.
I agree. I loved it, but they don't have it on Mac, so here I am back in KOTOR. And the thing is, I know the big twist, and like I've known it for like 7 years, so like,
you're actually a Wookiee.
Can I just call it Knights of the Old Republic for a second? All right, yes. That's it. There we go.
In case someone didn't know, or because you just want to get it out in there?
Oh, just I'm
hey, I'm happy for you either way.
I'm not a fan of the acronym NIMLs.
Oh, okay.
So
that's rough.
Yeah, I know. It's hard in this business.
Yeah, man.
Rather than just be laboring, just talking about KOTOR, which is a game that obviously has a ton of love out there. How do you how do you feel about Mass Effect?
Like the series?
Yeah.
It was one of my absolute favorite series. Mass Effect 2 is probably my second favorite game of all time.
After
Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Wait. So Mass Effect 2 over Mass Effect 3?
Yeah. Mass Effect 3 was a big bummer. Yeah. No, like when I was at G4, like I was like the lone person in the office who like hated it, and I got so much hate from like everyone. Like a lot of people were like, how could you not like the ending? How could you not like this? Like, people were upset because I did not like it.
So now that you're like ramping...
That's how the end of the network happened, right?
Yes, that was it. Nicole called
I'm the downfall.
She's
like, sorry,
I'm going to burn this place down.
If I'm going down, you're going with me.
I'm bringing the whole temple down.
Didn't work out for
So now that you're ramping into KOTOR, like, what do you think about the two systems? How do you compare them? I think that, you know, and I've wondered how much
game in two systems.
Yeah, I've always nice.
Like, what do you mean the two systems? Like, what do you mean?
So they both have a very similar light dark mechanic sort of thing.
Yeah,
and maybe it's just fond remembrances. But the more I played Mass Effect, the more I thought that actually they did a better job of it in the Knights of the Old Republic games.
It was subtle.
Well, I mean, I think that fiction. In
there's KOTOR. A light and a dark.
Well, no, but that story overall as a game was probably one of the best pieces of Star Wars fiction, like since some of the original films.
Yeah,
like better than the Lucas. I mean, that story was fucking awesome. Like anyway, that was I think what drew a lot of people to it and why
definitely.
So
no, you're right.
You know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I even though I know kind of like the end results, like I'm kind of building my own story within that story, mm-hmm. and it's trying to decide what decisions to make. And there's no red text, blue text like there is in the Mass Effect morality system. So there's definitely like I'm kind of wondering if I'm saying the right thing, but if someone's being bitchy to me, like Bastila, I think her name is, like she's a bitch. So like sometimes I want to be mean to her, but I still want to be light side. But she just needs to shut up sometimes.
Yeah.
So you have to balance that.
It's hard to be a Jedi.
It's like high school.
It's hard to be a Jedi.
Yeah. Jedi high school.
Damn, it's hard to be a Jedi.
They should make a show on the CW.
Jedi high school.
Jedi high school?
I feel like a damn it feels good to be a gangster.
Yeah, it sounds like the most boring show ever.
No, what? Because
like, every episode of Jedi high school is, I must not feel emotions. Oh.
You're in high school.
There's a conflict happening, yeah. But
that's
I must not feel emotions.
That's the conflict, though. Okay, so yeah.
Jedi puberty.
You know Anakin is the only Jedi that ever fell in love, right? I mean, come on.
Well, they had to keep breeding. I don't understand. understand why they're afraid of that. Why do they have like Jedi farms?
Yoda babies.
Jedi farms?
Why don't they just like pump out Jedis? They're
You're
always
so romantic.
No, but seriously,
that's your view of.
There's always like a lack of Jedis. Every Jedi or Star Wars story, there's always like, oh, the Jedi are dying out. Oh, they're all joining the dark side. Oh no, Anakin killed them all.
There's
like,
a thousand
have more babies.
There's a thousand boys listening to this right now that are going to send you Valentine's Day cards saying,
"Good,
hey,
I need
hey,
some."
Hey Nicole, do you want to pump out a Jedi with me?
If you're a Jedi. I mean, you need to both be, I mean, ideally both be Jedi. Like,
see there, we got midichlorian testing these days. So
no, if you're both
Jedi. That's ideal.
Yeah. If you're both lightsaber Jedi, it wins. It's like two negatives make a positive.
I don't know if that's true. I'll have to do some research.
Yeah, well, let me know how it goes.
I'll do some research. But I was actually playing KOTAR, and like the Yoda alien was saying, like, so many Jedis have joined the dark side. We really should train you, even though you're an adult. And I'm like, let them have babies.
It's not how it works, Nicole.
Well, maybe it should. They're always in peril. They're always dying. Safety in numbers.
I don't think it's... I guess it is passed down genetically, isn't it?
I mean,
well, until midichlorians were introduced, and then it became like...
It's like male pattern baldness.
Listen, yeah. JJ has a lot of work to do to fix this shit.
The Force is male pattern baldness.
Except way cooler.
Ah, the Force is with me, evidently.
And I'm not just its founder, I'm one of its customers. Oh dear.
If you look at Yoda, maybe it's true. The male pattern baldness.
Well,
thing.
Dude, that guy's like 1,000 years old. You gotta give him a fucking break. And no, I don't know how old Yoda is, so get
all
off
right.
my ass on that.
All right.
Actually.
Enough fucking around. What else is happening in your segment?
I wanted to talk about Nintendo.
Oh.
Yeah, just in general. I kind of feel like they're at a rough patch. You know, I think Iwata and I kind of need to talk. So basically, today Nintendo held a kind of briefing with investors, and they're basically losing a ton of money for the first time in ever. And Iwata said something, and the article was translated, so like things could be lost in translation.
He might have actually been ordering a sandwich.
You know, who knows?
He said, "All our base are belong to us." I don't know.
I don't know what it meant, but. He said that within the next fiscal year, and I guess this fiscal year ends March 31st, so within the next one, they want to generate 100 billion yen, which is $1 billion. And he kind of said something that would imply if they didn't meet this goal, he would resign. And this is kind of a rumor, even though it's translated, it's still a rumor. I don't know how that works, but he implied that... I don't know how it works, man. It's the internet. I read it on NeoGAF. Okay?
Must be true.
It probably is, though. So, I mean... The point is, Nintendo's in a really bad situation. They lowered their expectations for Wii U sales by 30%. They think it's only going to sell 1 million more units within the next few months. They lowered their expectations by 2 million consoles for the 3DS by March. And they said that, unlike the 3DS, where when it was doing bad, they kind of like reevaluated the pricing for it, and they reintroduced a price point for it, and it did better. They said, that's completely out of the question for the Wii U. We're not changing the price on this. And that's what they said. Like, that's what they said to investors. And they said the reason that this is kind of the issue is because we, what was the quote he said? Not yet fully communicated the value of our product. And he said that that's because a lack of games, lack of third party, which is a total cop-out to say lack of third party when there's not a good selection of first party. I'm
just saying. Well.
What's second party?
That would be you making a game.
Oh.
Second party would be a independent studio being funded by Nintendo for a product that was being developed specifically for their platform.
Not really independent then.
No. But it'd be an outside studio. So it's like the studio not owned by Nintendo, but when they contract to build something for them. But regardless, I mean, yeah, we could say it's a cop out. It is factual. They have, or it's definitely, it rings true to me. Mm. They have failed to demonstrate really why do I need a Wii U? And yeah, a big part of it is because there's no software. I mean, the demonstration would be in the software.
Yeah, that's a giant overcomplication of the problem. Yeah, not really. But yeah, no, that's exactly right. Because it is about the games. And like, you can complain about your hardware and dropping price points all you want. If there's stuff people want to play, people will buy that.
Yeah, but how is Nintendo going to convince third-party people to jump on board when they're not putting their full support behind it? A new Zelda game hasn't been announced. Pikmin 3 is not out. Where's Super Smash Brothers that they promised us like 20 years ago?
Well, Super Smash Brothers looks like it's going to be even later than...
Is it started? Like, that's questionable.
They're going to reveal screenshots of it at
E3. What? Ooh, just like the JPEG they released 2 years ago?
You know what I bet it looks like?
Mario Kart's going to be playable.
Super Smash Brothers. In HD.
It is a little bit odd that of the ones that they're showing in playable, that that's not one of them. It seems like it's further behind. This
there,
is
there was no, there were no solid launch titles for this game. Like, the biggest draw was Nintendo Land, and that game infuriated me.
Well, let me.
The biggest draw should have been Mario.
I agree, but
I mean, come
but
on.
There is a flip side to this, which it,
and the 2D Mario game is quite good.
Meh.
Agreed.
Why do you say meh?
Because I like my RPG Marios. Like, it's not really RPG, but like action adventure Mario's.
But the one they have in there is really good.
It's really
I'll
good.
Like Super, Mar- really good.
Super Mario.
Super Mario 64. Like, that's my Mario.
Because you're young.
Sure. Mm. But then I like Sunshine, and then I like Galaxy.
That's my Mario.
It's me. Me Mario.
Have you played through Super Mario Brothers?
The newest one?
No.
The class.
Super Mario Classic. Brothers.
I never finished it, no. I don't have the patience anymore.
Oh, well, I guess that was back in the day when, you know, there was only so many games and everybody tried to...
For me, Super Mario World is my favorite.
Oh, no, I know, but I mean...
And like, the great thing about the Nintendo was that controller could take some abuse, because you could get pissed off at that game and try and smack that controller and smash that controller.
That is the best
and
thing.
That controller would not break.
That's true. Well, it only had like two parts in it, though.
Let me just make a quick counterpoint to... Whoop.
Very, very unprofessional.
Let me make a quick counterpoint.
Is the tea ready?
Very unprofessional. Let me make a quick counterpoint to us all complaining about the first party stuff, which is valid. But I applaud the fact that Nintendo doesn't just poop shit out.
Yeah.
In order to fill out the ranks of the, like, they're not going to put out Super Smash Brothers until it's fucking ready.
Well, they shouldn't have put out the Wii U until it was ready.
Well, I mean, I guess you can make that argument, but I'm glad that they're so committed to quality with their first party stuff that they're, you know, the Zelda game, they're going to make sure it's good. And the Mario game, they're going to make sure it's good. They don't put out crappy versions of their,
right,
you
but
know,
we remember
temple.
Like
the and Skyward Sword was crappy.
They used to release
Skyward Sword's phenomenal.
Crappy.
Where's the tentpole game?
It's
though?
Awesome.
Crappy. Where's that tentpole launch title that like all the other fucking Nintendo launches have had? Like,
no, I agree with you, man.
You know, that's such a bad move on their part. And you know, I mean, hey, it is what it is. You want to push the hardware out, start selling it. Great.
I feel like we're beating a dead horse. Yeah. So what's the answer? What would you tell Mr. Iwata?
First of all, you got to cut the price. Like, I think the GameCube launched at $200. Wii launched at $250. There's no reason the Wii U should be $300.
Not two
game.
Screens, yo.
Yeah, but I don't really need them. Convince me that I need them. And that's my second thing, is that I think that the next generation of consoles is going to utilize a second screen the way the Wii U gamepad is. But I don't think they're going to have their own gamepad. I think they're going to allow people to use their smartphones, and they're going to use tablets like Surface and iPads, and they're going to use it through their own software the way...
Well, Xbox...
Smart Glass.
Yeah, they're saying.
And I think that Nintendo, if they need something along those lines that they can not just have a second screen where I can like do this, which I don't really want to do. But
by the way, she's using like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
She's holding the thing in her hand
and dancing around.
Yeah, dancing around. And
she did a cartwheel. It was weird.
I don't know. She
was showing how if you're holding the controller pad in your hand, you can either look at the controller pad or the TV, but not both at the same time.
So I think that they should use that as a software that would complement the game in the way that I think Xbox is going to do it. And I think they showed kind of, for Game of Thrones, they showed like a map and they showed like some lore. And like, I feel like if Nintendo kind of used that as a companion to some of their games, it would just expand what it's going to do or what it can do. And even if that's not what they want to do, that's what the other consoles are going to do. And so I think that they need to start doing things that's going to compete. And I think that... It's not my idea. I mean, every analyst is telling them this. They need to go mobile. They need to have something on the mobile devices that people will play on their iPhones and their smartphone, which is why the decline of handheld games.
So that you want them to have something that's a game. Because they did announce at mobile in their last Nintendo Direct that they would have a interface for your Mii U.
Okay, that's another thing. You got to let go of the Miis. Nobody likes the Miis. Nobody. Come, none of you do.
No.
You all bought a Wii, and you were like, I'm going to make a me. I'm going to make a Jesus me. And then someone sent me like an Assy McGee me, and that was like the end of it.
No, I always just select my Christopher Walken me, and that's it.
I don't, just like, who cares about me's?
Me.
Liar.
Me.
No, I was doing Christopher Walken.
Oh, okay. Oh.
Me.
Me.
No, but.
Oh. What do you mean?
I can understand why they wouldn't want to launch
who
a game.
Who cares about me's?
Who cares about me's?
It's ridiculous.
You guys are nailing it.
Yeah, go ahead.
That was great. Mm. I enjoyed it. So I can understand they wouldn't want to do actual games on phones because then you wouldn't buy that game on your 3DS. But have something. Why isn't there an official Pokedex? Like, why isn't there something that I can pay for on my iPhone? Like, let me give you money because
they have the handheld
way.
System.
Because I don't. What if I don't want to pay 70? How much is a 3DS?
It's not $70.
See?
It's not $70.
That's what I was willing to pay.
It's $200.
See? That's why. I already have an iPhone, and I can't afford an iPhone 5, I'm not going to buy a 3DS.
Why in the universe would they support an iPhone
because
if they have
their
handheld
system? Because they need to
system.
Realize that they're bleeding money, and they have two consoles on the market that nobody wants, and they refuse to do price cuts, and they're not launching system sellers, and they don't have exclusives, and they need to stay afloat.
Whoa! I don't think busted out the truth wand!
I don't think that they're in any danger of not being afloat. And I also don't think that... I think everything's going to, you know, it's not as dire as all that. I agree that there's problems, but I think that, you know, come Mario, comes Zelda's longer away, but I think...
Zelda hasn't even been announced.
The GameCube era was just fine, and they were a distant third, and,
but
you know, they were just...
GameCube.
Well, so did I. And,
but do you love Wii U?
It's not a purple lunchbox.
There's things I love about it, certainly. And I'm sure that when there's I love the Super Mario 2D game that's on there. I really I have fun with Nintendo Land in a party environment.
So Jeff, let me extend this. Let's extend this conversation. What if this fall, new machines come from Microsoft and from Sony, and so their curve has started.
Yeah,
and
that's going to happen.
And Nintendo is sitting there with the Wii U.
Yeah,
and they have Mario Kart.
Right.
A new 3D Mario.
Right.
The promise of Smash Brothers sometime in the new year.
Right. Promise of Zelda sometime, someday.
There's not even a promise of Zelda.
And Zelda in a year and a half after that.
I think that's problematic.
How do they stay in the game? And at what point? I mean, the thing is, Nintendo has done an excellent job with their mascots of always finding the way to talk to the next generation. Because there's always a new generation of kids coming up who haven't played anything.
They have the best IPs of any console, of any publisher.
It's hard to argue that. It's very hard to argue that.
Shy Guy origin story. Saying it. What is their story? What's behind
the
mask?
Like everybody was just saying the exact same thing during the GameCube era. Everybody was saying, oh my God, they don't have any third-party support. Oh my God, it's few and far between with these first-party releases.
Weird proprietary disc, not as powerful.
They didn't post a loss, though.
The GameCube, looking back on the GameCube is such a better system in retrospect than it was in actual, like, when it was out, though.
Everybody loves it now. You don't hear a bad word about it, but at the time, you couldn't get anyone. Everybody was clamoring from the mountaintop about how shitty it was.
I was a kid, so I was like, yeah.
Right.
I don't know. Well, I played the hell out of some Rogue Squadron.
So did I. I fucking loved that system at the time.
Darkness,
I did.
Like a lot
everybody
of great
stuff. Was saying Nintendo should. Dude, if you remember at the time, it's important not to have rosy colored glasses because at the time, everybody was saying, the thing Nintendo should do is stop being a hardware manufacturer and just be a software manufacturer. And
there
then
was some, especially with Sega's exit.
Everybody was saying that Microsoft should buy Nintendo was the big.
Was that?
Yes. That, now that fucking remember all that stuff because, and then the Wii came out and it blew everybody away. Not from I'm impressed by the hardware, but from how much money it made. And
oh my God, my grandma's playing video games again.
Well, it made Nintendo king of the sales for all this. You know, from month after month after month. And it changed the whole narrative about that company. And so...
But what do you think? Do you think it taught the company a lesson in terms of, hey, we don't necessarily have to really focus on software. We've got these party titles and whatever, and we're selling... We don't even have to do anything, and we can't keep these things in stores. And now you actually have to compete with other hardware that is similar to yours, and you're like...
It's better than yours.
I think it manufactured a sense of hubris because they... went their own direction apart from what everybody in the industry was doing, and they, you know, blew away everybody else's sales. Yeah. And I think that they're just as confident, or were just as confident with the Wii U in that respect. And they're like, well, we're going to do this, and, you know, everybody's going to come around to our mode of thinking. And I think that's happening, not happening as much as they thought it was going to. And that's okay. They're not going to go out of business, and they're not going to, I think the overreaction it needs to be checked to, you know, what this means. I don't think it's as dire as all that.
Chickity check yourself.
Yeah. I'm just saying. And on all due respect to you, Nicole, I think you have some really good
ideas.
No, I think you have some really good ideas here, and I think that there's a lot of stuff that they...
Ice climbers, where are they?
They're climbing the ice.
Well, what's their story?
So, Nicole, your segment, you can wrap it up. What would you tell Iwata in closing?
Pokemon MMO.
Pokemon-mo?
Pokemon-mo. That is my closing remarks.
Pokemon.
Your move, Iwata.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back. We will let the two Jeffs have the second half of the show.
Sure, you can pay $60 if you want to play a video game. But what if you want to play all the latest video games? Try Gamefly.com, the number one video game rental service. Right now, you can sign up for just $5.95, their lowest price ever. Gamefly has over 8,000 titles, including the hottest new releases like DMC Devil May Cry, The Walking Dead, and Hitman Absolution. And here's how easy it is. Just sign up, select your games, and Gamefly will ship them directly to your door. You can keep the games as long as you want, there are no late fees, and you can cancel at any time. Once you're done playing a game, send it back, and Gamefly will send you the next available game on your list. Now, you can also play hundreds of PC games with Gamefly's new Unlimited PC Play, which is free for members. Gamefly also saves you money by letting you try your favorite games before buying them. If you really like the game you're playing, simply click Keep It on the Gamefly website, and it's yours at a deeply discounted price. And if you're still unsure, which you shouldn't be at this point, but if you're still unsure, we're offering our listeners a special offer. This is just for Weekend Confirmers. Go to Gamefly.com/WeekendConfirmed for an extended 15-day free trial. That's GAMEFLY.com/WeekendConfirmed and sign up today.
The dulcet tones of Jeff Cannata. Which leads right into Take It Away, my man. All yours.
After you, sir.
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we start by talking a little bit of Skulls of the Shogun, since you seem to have played that as well.
Yeah.
I freaking love it.
It's awesome.
It's really good. So this is like, it kind of blows my mind because this is the second time in very short period of time that turn-based strategy has gotten a serious, you know, shot in the arm slash revamp slash overhaul. Feels totally fresh. This is obviously a bit different than XCOM in a lot of ways.
It's a lot different.
I mean, it actually streamlines the formula to a degree where, at least for me personally, like it gets to the point where it feels like you're playing more of an action game than a strategy game, because you can select and move your units so quickly and everything's so fast and kinetic and sort of free-flowing in terms of movement. There's no grid. It's a radius. So it's like it just feels very, very, very streamlined.
Yeah.
It doesn't have that sort of stop-start chess-like thing that most turn-based strategies do.
Yeah, I agree. I happen to like that chess-based thing in games. I do, too. But you're right that it's amazing. We had Jake on the show a while back, and he was talking about, I think he mentioned relating it to a fighting game, and it definitely feels like that will be like round one or whatever. And there is an alacrity to what you're doing. You move through. You're physically moving your guys, and you're not on a grid. You know, everything is really smooth, and it's such a. I mean, it very much is, as he said again when he was on the show. It very much is Advance Wars. Which is a friggin' awesome game that I've loved for a long time.
No, super, yeah.
But it very much is that formula in a lot of ways, but just those relatively minor tweaks that seem so fresh and such a fresh look at that formula, those tweaks of how you control your guys, how you move them across the game board.
Like you could, it's almost like a sport-like treatment. Like if... I didn't ever think that a sports game could be translated into turn-based strategy effectively, but this system might, for example, work for a, you know, I don't know who would make a turn-based football game or a turn-based basketball game, but it's so fluid and smooth and like, and things move so fast. I mean,
it almost feels more like basketball.
It's really telling if you go into multiplayer, there is, you can do stuff like, you know, you can play async or you can play real-time matches, and you can dial down on, if you're playing somebody else on XBLA, you can dial it down to 20 seconds per turn. So, which is really like, awesome. if you're moving five things in 20 seconds, it's really like, it is an action game at that point.
Yeah. I haven't played any multiplayer.
Oh, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. I mean, I would love to see, you know, more maps and hopefully, you know, since it's getting, you know, well received and stuff, that they'll start adding some more arenas. They have a pretty good mix of like, you know, maps that are so big that you're going to be there for a while, and small maps good for, you know, little teeny quick matches, 15, 20 minutes or whatever. But it's,
I'm happy for them for having found the deal that they made with Microsoft.
Is it only Xbox?
No, it's only Microsoft platforms,
yes.
But it's three Microsoft platforms.
And I wish so badly it was also on, like, my iPad.
Something that was a bit more ubiquitous than Windows 8.
Yeah, but, you know.
But so the cool thing about it is what they've done with this, you know, Windows 8 deal is you can play 360 can play real-time, whatever. That's sort of the most that's the game that I played, you know, reviewed it on. But then you can also, if you have, somebody has a tablet or they have a Windows 8 phone or a Windows 8 PC, you can basically play asynchronous multiplayer between all of those devices with up to four people. So I can play on my Xbox, take a turn. You could be on your phone, take a turn. Somebody else could be on, you know, so, and all these devices communicate together in one match, which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know anybody with a Windows 8 phone right now.
Well, and the Windows 8 PC thing is especially annoying.
Yeah.
Because, by the way, Windows PC could just be Windows PC. You didn't have to make it Windows 8 other than, oh, we wanted it in the App Store. And I get, like, it's a great deal for Jake and for his studio, but damn, the idea of, you know, async play and being able to go and take your turn in different spots is really cool until you realize, oh, yeah, I really can only play this game on Xbox 360. Yeah. And a lot of people are going to be in that position. It's not like there are a ton of people with Windows 8 phones or Surface tablets or Windows 8 PCs. Mm-hmm. I get it. It works for them marketing-wise, but I just think it does sort of deny a little bit of the cool access element that the game built in.
Mm.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. I mean, it does end up being more of a, you know, a bullet point that you can put on your marketing sheet than something that everybody's going to be using all the time. But it's a neat addition. It would be, regardless of whether or not it had any multiplayer other than just straight up XBLA multiplayer, I would still totally recommend this game to anybody.
Could you play on Xbox, have a game going, and then like leave and continue it on your phone?
Yes. I don't know. I don't think it's cloud based. I think the
that
no,
you would can't. Be cool.
Oh, that was one of the things they demoed. Yeah, you can. I'm pretty sure you can do that.
Okay, so in your own. Yeah, I know. When you're playing, I just wasn't sure if you could do that in an asynchronous multiplayer match.
That's the whole point of the async, right? Is that you can then get up and take your plays, moves, or wherever.
Yeah. No, you might be right. I didn't have a chance to actually sample that part of the functionality because I don't have any.
Because you don't have it. Because like most of us, I mean, it doesn't. But again, it doesn't really matter because who has Windows 8 junk at this point? Stuff, whatever. Who has Windows 8 stuff?
Absolutely true. If that should not really be a selling point. However, man, the game itself is great. It's really fast. The art is off the chain,
and the writing is excellent too.
Yeah, surprisingly. I mean, it's a turn-based strategy game, but there's a full campaign that you go through, and it's snarky and stuff and clever without being annoying. I mean, it's very self-aware and you know, it's a nice tale about trying to become the shogun of the dead, basically, you know.
I think the thing that other games will crib from this game is how well they implemented their system of getting away from grid system.
Yeah,
for movement.
Really inspired. I think that is a really inspired progression of this kind of game.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like Jeff said, I think people are turned off often just by grids, whether they're
because you feel like you're locked in. It's like, oh, you just lockstepped three forward and one over, and it's really chess-like.
Yeah, and I think that's off-putting to certain people, and the fact that you can go anywhere you want, you know, I think that's a big differentiator.
Well, and it's not just movement, right? So like movement's great and everything, but they've done stuff with the environment that's sort of atypical to turn-based strategy. Like you can knock guys off ledges.
Yeah.
Like kill an unit instantly. If it's standing too close to a ledge, the way you keep your units from getting knocked down is you put a couple of them next to each other and it creates a spirit wall, and then they can still attack you, but they can't, you know, push you around the battlefield and stuff. It's and then they add ice and stuff, so you'll, you know, be in levels where you guys will get hit and they'll fly across the screen, or yeah, avalanches that come down the middle of the screen in the middle of the, you know, it's there's a lot of cool little surprises in especially in the main campaign.
And they roll them out in a really cool staggered way, so it feels like every level or two there's some new thing. You're like, yeah, oh, you're cool, that's neat.
Pretty much all the way to the end they're introducing some new stuff. So yeah, highly recommended. Even if you're not, you know, if you were sort of on the fence and XCOM still looked a little too, you know, turn-based for you, but you wanted to try turn-based strategy, this is definitely a good way to get into it.
Yeah.
The other game that I want to be sure to talk about today is Proteus, which just came out, which is it's an indie game by Ed Key and David Kanaga, I believe. And it's one of those art games that's more of an experience than traditional gameplay, but basically you are exploring a dynamically generated wilderness landscape that's on an island. So every time you start the game, you start on this island, and it's like navigating an 8-bit impressionist painting.
What does dynamically generated mean?
So it means that every time you start, your island is
different.
It's like the trees and rocks and animals and birds and stuff you see is totally randomly placed by the computer every time you start a new game. So everybody's island is different.
The dynamic part means it's generated through a series of rules that make it so it's not completely random. It
right.
seems like it has
it still a, looks like an island. Like you're
yeah,
gonna
it has
trees
a sense of
in the sky
or logic like, to yeah. it.
Yeah. Yeah,
so tree birds.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, Minecraft is the same way. Yeah.
Tree bird, play tree.
Oh, okay. Or like a level in Diablo.
That song is so long. Oh, anyway. So Proteus, the other great thing about it, so you're like navigating this 8-bit impressionist artscape, basically, that's nature-based. The game takes place over, goes through the four seasons. There's weather, there's animals, there's all sorts of stuff. And everything in the game has a musical or a sound component to it. So as you're walking through, you're basically creating this audioscape that's sort of new. It is, I mean, it's music, but it's like comprised of all these different little things. Like when you're over by this grove of trees, you'll get a certain set of sounds, or when the rain starts falling, you're like, oh, that's very reminiscent of rain. Or you'll hear like a hooting sound and you'll notice an owl has landed in a tree next to you or whatever. It's really,
what's the gameplay?
The gameplay is exploration based, basically, and wandering around this island, experiencing the different seasons. And
are you finding things, or are you just like being yourself?
No, there are things. There's nothing to. There's very little to do per se, other than exploration. It is really purely exploration. There are demarcators between seasons, so you know when you're entering a new season, other than just visually. But it is the feeling that I got. I played it right before I went to bed last night. It takes about an hour or so to, you know, go through the whole thing. And I was pretty elated when I was done with it. It's very hard to articulate. It's very like I was reading somebody else's commentary on it. They were saying it sort of gives you that feeling that you get when you're like, you know, oh, you know, she likes me, you know, like that sort of like new kind of like hopeful.
When you're ready to pump out a Jedi.
It's a good idea. I stand by what I said.
I said subtle. But, no, but I mean, it's like, yeah, so it gives you this, it gave me this really interesting feeling of, I don't know, hopefulness and just, it's a very positive game.
That's cool.
It's just, but yeah, it is totally different than anything, the most other things out there. But it's really a interesting.
How do you get it?
It's on Steam right now, actually. Hmm. And I think you can also get it from the developer's website. I want to say when I picked it up the other day, it was like 10% off on Steam. So, but.
How much is it?
Normally $9.99, but I think it's one of those things that I will be playing through multiple times. So don't get the once you played, you're done. Because when you get out, and I'd love to, if one of you guys played it, because I want to see if
we have that life-changing kind
yeah, I want to
hopeful.
It's like,
Mine was sad.
Well, I'm bored.
It's very contemplative. You know, it is sort of like you do get in. It makes you introspective. You get inside. It reminded me a lot of. Nothing else.
It reminded me a lot of
nothing.
Jesus
nothing.
Christ.
No,
nothing.
I was gonna make some sort of really intangible comparison to something like Kentucky Route Zero, which is a completely different game, but it's also one of those games that is very, very difficult to describe why it is so awesome.
Is it more of an experience?
Like, oh, definitely, yes.
It's one of those games where it's like not really a game.
If you mean, do you have an objective other than to experience the...
other than to be?
No, I mean, the analogy of walking through an 8-bit impressionist painting is very much like that's what it's like.
So
if you can imagine doing that, that's sort of anyway.
But I mean, that's the thing, is that these experiences in indie games, one of the things that makes them for those with whom they resonate, which they do with me a lot, that makes them special, is that they really do defy explanation, and because they're touching you in a different way. There's not a game system there that you're interacting with. And I love a good game system. Look, I loved Ni No Kuni because it delivered a great game system to me to go with all the other parts. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I love a more atmospheric artistic game for its simplicity and not relying on those things, for reaching me on a different wavelength.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is one of those games that could not have been made by anyone other than an independent developer.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get transcendent games like Journey, which I think works on both. I mean, I think that one of the brilliant elements of Journey is stripping away all of those emotional atmospheric pieces of it. It's still very fun to play with the controller in your hand, mm-hmm. and it plays like a game, and it plays like a game that you're enjoying, you know, because you're still moving your character around and you're still jumping and you're still exploring and you're doing things that feel quasi traditional game-like, while at the same time it's reaching you in this much more atmospheric, emotional sort of way.
Yeah.
Well, and
on your journey.
And Proteus is very much a game that when you sit down to play it, you have to sort of force yourself to strip away what expectations you have about games and what you expect a game experience to deliver. It's like, you know, you have to kind of open book it and go, okay, show me what you have. And I'll see how it resonates.
I think it sounds fascinating.
It does.
It is really, really good. I, you know, no reservations recommending it. Now I will qualify this with: if it doesn't resonate with you, you're going to look back at what I'm saying and think I'm full.
What a nut.
Yeah, or just like, yeah.
That's
a nice way to put it.
Can we get that as a drop for future episodes so we can just
what a nut?
What a nut! Just have Nicole drop in.
It's cool. Like, you know what? The indie movement is something I really hope continues to survive and thrive.
How could it not? I really feel like it's got a momentum that has never had before. And it's so easy for developers to get their games out to people now. It's easier now than it has ever been.
And it's never been easier to pick up that mantle and become – just decide, I'm going to be an indie game developer and I'm going to learn some shit and I'm going to crank out some product some art and see what I can do.
Yep.
I hope the next
All
gen...
I can say is that I agree, but things change. Yep. Things change dramatically and you never know. But maybe not, you know. I don't think it's – I think it's something we don't really worry about. They're right. There are a lot of great things. But I was just thinking about those because, you know, I just picked up Unfinished Swan, which mm-hmm. I've been meaning to play for forever. Nice. And then Alexander Bruce's Antichamber comes out.
Yeah, we were talking about that.
Or yesterday. Well, today's.
Yeah, whenever you're listening to this.
Yeah, exactly.
It came out already.
Which I'll definitely be talking about that next week.
I'm very excited to check that. We've all played it at events.
Forever. And it's so cool that he finally has like polished. I'm a little concerned because some of the later puzzles, the first time I played it, the last time I played it, which was like DICE last year, were already pretty devilish.
Oh, yeah. No, devilish? It's the early buzz is that it's a fucking brain breaker, but in the best way possible.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's very, like, for those who are wondering, it's a Unreal-based game that is, like, a abstract Escher.
Yeah, but when...
It's harder. It's even weirder than that, but yes.
That's the cocktail napkin description, the best I can give.
It's Unreal Engine, but he basically custom...
It looks like nothing
he customized the Unreal Engine, too. It basically uses, you know, reverse lighting and...
It's
bizarre.
It's not exactly a... show piece.
it's not a texture mapped show piece, but it is a very interestingly
it's very looking.
Crafted
it looks very interesting,
style.
But when you say like, it's like, oh, I would start thinking, wow, it must look amazing. It looks
a little MS Paint
bizarre.
No, it's a game though. It's cool. I guess the point that I was making is it's a game you look at and you would not guess that it was an Unreal Engine game.
Yes, that's true.
So anyway, that that's sort of that. I guess I don't know. If I got a few minutes, I'd sort of like to mention this article that Eurogamer put up today.
You're welcome to. I thought you were going to talk about your quote that you had from Jonathan Blow's tweet.
Well, I can do that. They're both really interesting.
Jonathan
topics.
Blow's tweet kind of fit in with what we were talking about. Let's, just because it was. I read the tweet and I was like, interesting.
Let's keep going with that. And we'll get to this other stuff if we have time. So here's basically. So Jonathan Blow went on Twitter and tweeted out some stuff, some controversial stuff, and a couple outlets picked it up and wrote stories about it. But basically, what he said was, let's see, he says. He took popular games to task again, tweeting, quote, "This week I played several recent games that are critically acclaimed but are obviously terrible, even at the acclaim-garnering things. It's like honing your craft as a chef while cans of dog food rebranded as people food are getting all the food of the year acclaim, and people who think they are experts on games are all nodding along. Yep, that makes sense. This dog food is Oscar-quality, delicious, and etc." Now, I think there's a level of pretension in what he's saying that's
in him?
Yeah.
Usually he's so grounded.
Well, no. Well, yeah, you're right. Okay, so that aside,
I think that's the snarky response, and it's certainly valid. But the non-snarky response is he's a dude who's fiercely committed to his ideals, and I think I kind of respect that. He can come off as a dick, but he certainly doesn't compromise, and he certainly practices what he preaches.
Well, I would agree.
What's
although
his next game?
I would argue that even Braid, which was a wonderful game, did not live up to his own lofty standards that he'd set for it, which is why there was all that fallout about, oh, people don't get my game, and like even though people love it, they don't understand it, and like they're just not getting the narrative, and it's just too. You know,
I loved Braid is one of my favorite games of all time.
I liked it quite a bit. What I'm saying is that I agree with the sentiment of what he is saying in that.
Do you think that some of the recent games that came out that were received accolades are dog food?
Compared to the games we just talked about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Far Cry 3 is dog food relative to Unfinished Swan because they're so different.
Well, no. See, that's... I think that's the other thing about this is he didn't.
I'm being leading intentionally because what bugs me about this sort of take is that it is to a degree to I'll even use his terminology. It is to a degree assigning food of the year claims to dog food, which would never be taken in that way anyway, because you're not talking about the same things.
Right.
And the simple fact that they are, this is another case of, yes, they are all by the public lumped together under the name of video game, but they are wildly different.
Right.
They are wildly different.
Well, I would equate it to, you know, when Sundance Film Festival first came around, right? And how the general public slowly became more aware of independent films and, you know, started to watch and rent more stuff. I mean, it's still hard to find in most mainstream communities. It's still hard to find an art house unless you're in, I mean, this town's a total exception, but or in New York or whatever, but like it really is. You have to go for a drive to find an indie art house even now. So,
and that doesn't make the Will Smith summer blockbuster dog food.
No, it absolutely doesn't. It absolutely doesn't.
Welcome to Earth.
Here's the problem with the movie analogy, which is problematic on numerous levels. But the biggest problem I find with it is that the dawn of movie making, what people were the earliest films that exist, people were trying to express themselves. In the earliest games that exist, people were trying to create a pastime, something that is a game, something that is a challenge and something to do. And
because, well, I would argue that because the technology afforded them the ability to do very little else.
Exactly. Completely agreed. And there were still people in that early time who were using video games in a really interesting way and trying to push the boundary that way. But the real problem is that, yes, indie filmmaking came around and it injected a new sensibility, but people had been using film forever to do things that weren't just escapism and weren't just, you know, sort of frivolous.
Well, but I'm talking about more like the jump from the Penny Arcade where you're turning the crank and watching a little, you know, 3 minute short to actually sitting in a cinema and watching something. I still think we're very much from a narrative perspective and a storytelling perspective and a, you know, maturity of medium perspective still in the Penny Arcade days as far as video games, as far as if you,
you mean technologically or thematically?
Thematically.
Like, well, but if you look at Lumiere, you know, like, I mean, I don't want to get, since we sound so pretentious, but.
You're already there.
But if you look at Lumiere.
Anybody that saw Hugo,
yeah,
you know, like yes. The guy, he was at the beginning of the film process and he was trying to do a certain thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we're just now getting to people with video games and even rarer with big budget mainstream video games where people are trying to do those type of things.
Right.
And I think.
Well, it's arguably far more complicated in games to do that sort of right. thing because of the interactive nature of them.
But. Right.
Yeah, but he's not even saying that indie games can do it. He's just saying that everyone else is crap.
I don't think he's saying
he's saying Game of the Year. He's like all these you know.
Well, The Walking Dead won Game of the Year in most publishers, and like it's not this big budget, guns in your face kind of game. Like it's a story game. It's point and click.
I think he more laments like. The part that I agree with him is I think that the medium has so much more potential to deliver more than it is right now. And yeah. And I think in this particular situation, and yes, the way that he expressed it is gonna draw some. I mean, it's honest. You know,
it's just
sure
so negative. He's not offering any insight. He's not saying what's good. Well, he's not even saying there's
potential.
You know,
my response, and we're all playing, as we all play amateur psychologists here.
Sure.
My response to this is that right off the bat, this fall's crop of AAA games, and defined by marketing or whatever it was, like, I can't think of any of them that I would say were dog food. Are there some that are to varying degrees lesser than they might have been anticipated to be, or lesser in execution than you might have thought they could be? Sure, but there's none of them that are dog food.
Right.
I think the wrong. I think the wrong.
What I'm hearing. Let me finish. What I'm hearing here, though, is more. An expression of those games soak up so much attention and there's so many cool yeah. things to see in indie games and God damn it, fucking pay attention. And right. that's true because right. in the movie, going back, the movie thing doesn't always work great. But one thing that is cool is that through things like Sundance and just through the rise of streaming services and good blogs, there is a perception, at least for me, that even an average moviegoer now has a little more idea of some of the really great, more thematic, more experimental films that are out there than a video gamer does, than a Call of Duty fan does of all of the great indies that might be out there.
I hear two things. First of all, I think the wrong impulse is to get defensive. And part of that is his fault for being offensive and like saying, what you like is crap.
Right.
I think that is a unfortunate side effect of the message he's trying to get out and the sort of emotional aspect that he's injecting into his message because he feels so strongly about it. And I'm not trying to defend him because clearly, you know, you should think about that before you say it. But I also think it's a mistake to draw a line down the middle between indie games and mainstream games. And I don't think what he's saying is indie games good, mainstream games bad. I think what he's saying is, and again, this is all us interpreting what these guys saying, but what resonates with me is to say the best and the brightest, the smartest people with the most resources, the most amount of money are bending their will and brain power and efforts and resources to making things that ultimately don't take full advantage of the medium, that what we're all lauding, what we're all heaping praise onto isn't trying to do anything. And that and
the audience at large is fine with that.
Exactly. And we as people who give awards, what he's saying is the people who are giving awards are going, man, this stuff is great. And it's the same exact game that we got last year and the year before. And the, I mean, from a gaming perspective, so many of the things that we're heaping praise on aren't attempting, don't even have it in their sights to try to push forward from a what you do perspective. Yeah. It's like...
Here's like a real world example. I guarantee you I will see, you know, 100 times more comments of people talking about praising, saying they did liked it, didn't like it, about Devil May Cry than I will about any of these other games, Proteus or right. Kentucky Route Zero, or which are far more important to the medium than another game where you run around and chop up demons, which is, you know,
yeah.
I'm having some fun with it. But yes, when you compare the two, it is like comparing Transformers to Citizen Kane. You just
and the differences between Devil May
which
Cry
Transformer. I'm just kidding.
And the difference between Devil May Cry and Ninja Gaiden or the old Devil May Cry or countless other things is important to the people that are fans of those things and important to all of us because we play them, but are so small and unambitious in the grand scheme of the medium that his point is valid. It's like all these resources are put into like creating a slightly different combat system in a slightly different world with a slightly different looking guy right. instead of really fucking going for it and trying to take the medium forward in some meaningful way. And I think from that perspective, he's got a point.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I think I love my Far Cries. I love my big budget AAA stuff, but I realize that when I'm going to a popcorn flick, and I also love my entertainment to teach me a thing or two or to make me think about stuff.
Yeah,
or,
you know. And I think that it, you know, all the people that are listening to this and getting their hackles riled is
– What?
That's fine.
Hackles,
but I think
cockles, whatever.
Cockles, sorry. Hackles.
I don't know.
Your hackles
are
up and your cockles. What happens to your hackles or your cockles?
Hackles up, cockles down.
Yeah. What's a cockle?
A cockle? I'll show you later. what I'm trying to say is I think try not to be a defensive about the games you love. Because yes, he expressed it as an attack, but I don't think it necessarily needs to be viewed as one. I think it's a rallying cry. At least he's attempting to do that.
Yeah, the way he does it. Like I said, I don't think it's so much
it's clumsy.
What he's saying that I disagree with. It's the way he's saying it, but I think it's a good message.
Yeah.
All right. How about we rally and get ready for the final segment. See, I figured after such deep subjects, we needed to go a little deep house.
Dude, the amount of chair dancing that goes on in here.
I know. A lot of chair dancing.
Oh. It's pole dancing?
I said a lot of chair dancing.
Oh, a lot of chair dancing.
I was agreeing with you.
Okay. At least you didn't go into the Michael McDonald refrains again.
Do not diss Michael McDonald on my watch. I swear, I will cut
don't
a birch.
Don't diss me.
And it is your watch.
It is my watch. Speaking of watches...
You better swatch yourself.
The night watchman lives.
You better have your watch on if you're playing the SimCity beta because you only get an hour. Segway.
Oh, man. That was
Segway.
Good.
Wow. I think the mixing in the wrong music was better than that.
Segway. You and I have both been playing a lot of SimCity beta. Anybody else here play any of that?
I wish I was, but no.
No, I didn't get a code.
Just over the weekend.
I lurve me some SimCity. This is the closed beta that was just over the weekend. It had a 1 hour time limit on it, so you could do as much as you wanted. Although there was still also, in addition to that, there were also a lot of things blocked out of the game.
A lot of stuff was blocked out.
Yeah. In fact, the game would give you quests to do things that you could not accomplish because they weren't in the game. It'd be like, yeah, make a fire station that has this. And I'd be like, I can't. It says not in beta on there. Anyway, but I lurve me some SimCity. from way back. And
if Lerv means that you love the idea of SimCity but didn't love this game, then I'm with you.
All right.
That's what Lerv means.
Go right ahead with your negativity.
No, no, it's your segment. I just wanted to set the table. Lerv, so you knew. I wanted you to set the table so you knew where I was coming from.
Lerv is more powerful than love, I'll have you know. Tell me what you didn't like, Garnett.
No, it's your segment. I want you.
And my segment is asking you what you didn't like.
So I agree with you. I love SimCity.
I love it.
I have gone back and played SimCity 4 numerous times just because I missed it. And I even want to talk about like the whole, what is it about being the city planner and all that that works for you?
Well, you know, let's start there for a second, and then we'll get to your negative Nancy. Because it is a wonderful, it's that thing that kids who were like a generation or two before us, you know, like our dads loved about train sets.
I totally agree.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
totally
building this little miniature town that you have complete control over.
And setting it on fire.
Well, setting it on fire. Or like,
I don't do the setting on fire. I just watch everybody go places.
I like it being a happy town too. But you
teach your own.
It's that little like, you know, knock the domino over or turn on the train set or whatever it is. And you see all the little pieces moving right and doing what they're supposed to be doing. And you work and you can tinker and you've got this little world that is yours. And there's so much joy in that. And also the game is wonderful about communicating systems, about seeing how things interlock and how, you know, building something up over here has an effect on something over there and giving you things that you always want to work for. So there's always like 12 different things that you wish you had money to do, which is like real cities, I'm sure. So anyway, that's the articulation of what the draw to those games is.
There are things that I am uncertain of because playing for the amount of time we have didn't give me enough time to figure them out. So I'll start there. I'm uncertain of how ultimately just building density based off of road density mm-hmm. is going to work, because it felt very weird just laying down generic zones and not having any sort of jurisdiction over, oh, I want to have light commercial here. Oh, I want to have medium commercial here. Oh, I want to have heavy commercial here. So I feel like it makes me concerned of how well am I going to be able to, as the city planner, dictate where those types of development occur. Now, these are all tied theoretically to road type, and there are many more roads in this game, and the roads give you different density packings based off of their size and their carrying capacity, of which we had three roads and one boulevard.
Yeah, so it was very limited in the beta.
Right.
Very limited.
And there wasn't enough time to really mature into the latter stages of density where you might actually build those big density.
And it seemed to indicate in the density map, the real data overlay of that, that you could dig down and sort of specialize certain areas and certain things, but it was so limited.
I wasn't sure how that works. I mean, you can do it. You can specialize your city.
Part of the tutorial was like, go to this density map and you can tinker, but I didn't get a sense of how, because there was no ability to do that. So
I must have missed that part of the tutorial because I don't remember what you're talking about.
Anyway, go ahead.
So
based on roads,
compounding that, I found that the zoning system in the beta was really a frustrating piece for me.
Because it was too simplistic?
Because I found that every time development started occurring, and one of the things that I was doing, I think you probably, I don't know, did you like crank the speed up a lot?
Yes.
Because you wanted
There's
to
a lot
get,
of waiting around.
Yeah, well, and you wanted to get as far into civilization as you could in that hour. So to maximize it, you put it on a gazelle and you're like, I'm going to try and keep up with shit best I can.
Yes.
And you also like buy bonds all the time because you're like, I don't have to worry about paying them off because in an hour this thing's dead anyway.
Yes.
It's kind of Armageddon City. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, run it into the ground.
Run it right into the ground. Doesn't matter. Like borrow, spend. It's America. But the zoning system that they had in this version only laid out a thin ribbon of the zone along the road, and it didn't give you a sense for how much space things would take. And as a result,
that's absolutely true.
The 3 hours, because I played 3 1-hour runs of it, and every time I kept on having all these weird developments that wouldn't fit together nicely and make nice developments and made ugly looking city.
But I made very liberal use of the bulldozer and would like knock stuff down and reorganize things.
I did too.
So
But I found that to be very frustrating. Choice. It's frustrating and time-consuming because one of the things you have to wait on here is you have to wait for something to be undeveloped, new developed, and then to have that new development piece integrate itself into all the systems. And there are a lot of systems running here. So when you lose a residence, especially if it's a more dense residence or a factory, there is a extended knock-on lag that happens from the time you decide to bring it down by the time you get new residents to move back in or new jobs, or worse if it's industrial, because then the place has to be built and then it has to send out the call for new workers and then new workers have to come and start working at it and then it turns on and then it starts making whatever it's making.
Dude, that sounds like a fucking simulation or something.
Yeah.
I'm saying that
they should call it Simulation City.
I know. Right?
And my point is that not giving me the ability to really know how those zones are going to lay out and develop is frustrating because I don't want to go crazy with a bulldozer. Mm-hmm. I want to, like, bulldozing is definitely something you need to do. And there are times you need to reclaim and rework parts of your city, but it shouldn't be just this like, oh, well that didn't build up the way I wanted it to. Yeah. And actually I was watching a strategy video subsequently and they actually had a different zoning system in there. And
I saw you tweet that.
Really preferred the way that looked. And what it was as you stretched a zone along an area, it showed you the land parcels that it was plotting out as if a surveyor would. Mm-hmm. So it was showing, and this is especially useful along curved roads because it would show you how the different land plots were going to lay along there. And this is critical because as you get into playing SimCity, you're always thinking about, well, how do I want to lay out my cities so that I can allow all of these buildings to lay in the way I want them to and the other amenities.
Yeah.
And the other amenities to lay in there.
Yeah.
And so then the knock on to that is then in addition to this, now every single thing has to touch a piece of road. So
that's true.
Everything has to touch a piece of road. So if I want to put up a water tower, I got to run a road to it. So yeah, there's some great water field over here. I got to run at least a dirt road over there and put the and have it go all the way out to where this water tower is. But take that a step further, like, and I realize it's the way we all learned how to do it, and it's going to be different now. But one of the things you always did in SimCity was you built around ornamentation in the middle of your blocks. We can't do that anymore. So now I have to put the parks up against a road. Okay, I guess there's some sensibility to that. Or maybe you build a little road around the park and, you know, sort of like you see normal development, a road right around the park and then things around it because there's a sphere of influence. Except that then everything is upgradable, which sounds cool at first, except that
you got to have room for that.
You have to have room for it. And each of these modular pieces locks on to different parts of the mother piece that you set down, and it starts to create really awkward shapes to deliver to build around. So now let's say, and it's such a cool idea, but it's so awkward to work around. So let's say you drop a park and now you want to add a pond to it. Well, the pond is not quite as big as the park, so you have to figure out like what corner to put it on. But now you want to add something because now you've got this weird space of void that's not filled in, but there's nothing that fits right in that void. So you put a basketball court on that. Well, then that creates another void back over here. And so now you're starting to wind up with this weird rectangular shaped park because you've added these pieces onto it, which was cool, sort of made it look more organic, but you can't get things to develop around it. So you wind up with weird open cells here and there that there's really no way to go back and clean up.
You're not wrong about any of that. It certainly didn't bother me as much as it seems to bother you. I think that it speaks more to your sort of OCD.
I fully admit to being OCD. When it comes to SimCity, I go crazy OCD.
No, but
I
like, that's what's like, fun about that game.
I like love to make a picturesque city with little systems running the way they want them to, with trains over here and buses over there and, you know, all of that happy shit. I admit to that.
Any news on Kaiju? Any monsters we're going to get?
Well, there was a zombie outbreak at the end of my first one.
That's awesome.
That is kind of awesome.
Yeah. You didn't get anything like that?
No.
So that would have changed his mind.
That is kind of cool.
So what kind of housing do zombies need?
They just destroy everything.
Do they need roads? Do they travel on sidewalks?
Where they're going, they don't need they don't roads. Need roads. I don't disagree with any of that. And I found myself frustrated more with the time limit because I felt like I couldn't dig deep on any of those things. And I don't think I got far enough along in any of my cities to feel the crunch of that because I was just sort of starting to get to that second level of complexity when the time would run out.
Yeah.
You know? Because I never got to like specialization. I never got to any of the stuff that really feels like it's going to be. And such a big part of this new SimCity is the relationship you have with other cities in your territory.
Super disappointing that they didn't include that in the beta. That
right,
is,
because
that is one of the key points to this game.
You don't get a sense of that at all. And it really, I think, it's gonna be the differentiator for this new revision. I did, however, find so much joy in the graphical upgrade, the level of detail that you can click on literally every single person on the map at any given time. It'll tell you how they're feeling, where they're coming from, where they're headed to. Like, they all have a little story.
I loved the simulation.
It's unbelievable. And there's, I mean, I could literally just sit back and watch it for so long, just seeing where everybody goes and where they live and how they go to school and then when they go to work. And
how crazy do they go? They let you like rename people and stuff? Or is it, you get, I mean, I assume you can name your buildings and all that.
Do you kill someone? Does their house go on the market?
Why would you ask that question?
It's a valid question.
she wants to move to New York City, obviously.
You gotta see somebody about that.
It's okay.
It takes a little while to get it through the courts.
I didn't get a sense that you could rename individual people, but maybe you can. I didn't get a sense of that. But
yeah, that would be off the chain.
That would be off. You could have literally a city like city.
Yeah, you'd have obsessive compulsive people dying in their, you know, yeah. on the start.
Screen. But to your point about,
it's weird now. You.
To your point about you know, sort of beautification of your city and having things fit. While what you said is not wrong, I found that just the ability to have curved roads now and the amount of detail that you can put in and these modular bits, it so much more scratches that itch of creativity of how my city is going to look and how different it can look from other cities and those modules, like it's wonderful to snap that stuff down.
I agree, but let me throw another one at you. So the space that we were given to play in was flat.
It was.
So all you did by putting in a curved road was waste space.
Yeah, but I got to make a fun curvy road.
I understand, and I think that aesthetically they look nice. I'm not disagreeing with you, and I think there's some cool things to do there aesthetically, and we can even go back to like classic, you know, like Parisian era city design and put in circles and radiant
yeah.
spokes.
Oh my God. I saw a guy online who made his whole city look like a target.
That's cool.
Like concentric circles with two crossing lines between the center is brilliant.
But one of the things I think is really
parking lot.
Potentially cool is the idea of curved roads in a geographical setting where I need
that requires
to fit the topography, right?
Yeah.
So now I could fit topography and actually have, you know, winding roads around hillsides and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that would be really cool, except, you know, and this is not anything that came out of the beta, but, you know, one thing we already know is that there's no terraforming in this game,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it'll be in a future expansion. But to talk to you about, like, a guy making a target, the thing, I think that not having the linking stuff within the region inside the beta was besides being a mistake and really frustrating for people who wanted to see it, was a mistake also because it really reinforced the individual cities in this game are small.
They are small.
They are, I mean, they are flat up small.
They are small. No,
you're not wrong. Can that just be a limitation of the beta?
Evidently not.
Yeah,
but
part
of the idea is that you're not just playing one city. So I felt
right.
like, why would they not have done that? Because you saw,
well,
I mean, they gave
beta.
You the region space.
It's not a demo, like...
Well, it kind
they
of
need,
is a demo.
If it was a real, really, if it was a beta, it? I'd want to test those
yeah,
systems.
If it's a beta, they, yeah, exactly.
Because those
that
systems
would be the
are
most,
critical.
Those would be the most beta, you know, the interacting with other people, like communication problems between computers, all that stuff.
Or running test. Them yourself, because theoretically, one of the really cool elements of this
right.
game is that you could build, I mean, really what they're calling cities are almost like
interlocking
suburbs or
they're like interlocking
areas.
Specialized units that you can trade amongst each other, so you can have this city that's really great at creating fuel, and then another city that
yeah.
it's great at creating.
I want a city that does all that, though.
Well, you can do that too.
So think of the region as your city, because
okay.
the way the game's set up is like you could start when you start your game, when you fire it up, and you start your region. You could literally jump into one region, put a road in, drop a big power plant on it, and leave. Go to another region and start your city. And the power plant in the other city will feed power into your city in that region.
You can do the same thing with water. You can do the same. Like each of these different.
Now, you're talking about stringing power lines between
no.
these two zones. And
they've eliminated all that
there's
stuff.
There's export and import. Like
I can't say I'm too disappointed about them eliminating that.
Yeah.
Because that was my least. I mean, just me personally. I got to the point with the original SimCity where I was building aqueducts and piping and toggling between the different planes of reality. It broke my brain.
yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
There are more fun things to micromanage probably than water and electricity. Right. I won't disagree with that. So basically the way it works now is every street has city services underneath it. So you've got electrical and water with every street.
You're piping your poop underneath the street, and you can see it like go. Yeah. Don't you want to see that? You want to see that? Come on.
But similarly, the way you used to have to plan out, like, where am I putting the dirty services, right. You could conceivably now look at your region map, take a second and look at, like, where the airflow patterns are, and figure out, oh, I'm going to put my dirty city over here and make that, like, where the dump and the power plant and the industrial world is.
Upwind. You don't want to live upwind.
No. And then, you know, you can make your bedroom communities and have all these things working together. Or I can make, you know, the bedroom community, and Jeff can make the power world, and Nicole can make
gambling town. Yeah.
All right.
Now you're in.
Okay.
Now you're in. Anyway, I loved it just from a pure aesthetic and scratching the itch of that wonderful miniature town, and how much the simulation really has progressed since earlier versions. Like,
really,
you're not wrong
the sophisticated
about
part of the simulation.
I agree. I just felt like I couldn't judge it negatively because I didn't get far enough to where I felt its problems be problematic.
Did you create any traffic jams?
No.
Oh God, I created the worst traffic jam.
That's funny.
You have to really, you're definitely going to have to watch. I mean, cause I did like one, I felt like I filled about half, maybe more of the map on one of my gazelle runs.
Oh,
I was just slamming shit down.
I filled the whole map twice at least, but I never felt
like filled it like dense and like got it going.
No.
And I wound up with like, I hadn't planned my road network fast. I mean, it's going so fast, right? Cause you're like trying to get through it. And I hadn't thought my roadmap system out very well. And I had everything funneling into a major boulevard, and boy, like,
and you're limited by the streets that you could put down at that point. So
it became a disaster. It was so funny. It was so funny, especially like when it would go to night and like, I was like, oh, it looks like the 405.
My favorite one. Yeah. It's funny. My favorite part was when the people would be like, I want a hospital. Everybody's sick here. And I'd be like, okay, not in beta. No hospital for you.
Well, you could have put in a
series
clinic.
Of clinics. Yeah, that's all I was doing. A series of clinics.
Hospices.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's Rite Aid.
Go to the mash tent.
That's all we can do.
No,
we triaged it.
Will the beta's performance affect either of your decision to buy it, or have like you guys already made up your minds?
Oh my God. The moment they announced SimCity, I made up my mind.
It was my game of E3 last year.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't think I'm gonna buy the fancy digital version.
Are you
gonna
buy some interesting thing perks?
Well, you get three extra building vocabularies. It's just like, God, dude, it's expensive.
That's
$80. $80.
Yeah, I know.
$80 digital.
It's ridiculous.
And then I'm gonna want those building packs, and then be like, why didn't I buy it? That was dumb.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be expansion packs churning out for a while.
I have to say this for first experience with Origin. Origin works pretty well.
No, it doesn't.
Until it doesn't. Yeah,
or it doesn't.
I dislike Origin.
That's why you should own a physical copy, because I've heard so many Origin horror stories.
I had heard horror stories, and it booted up and worked for me.
It boots up and works, but it's bloaty. It's weird. Anything where when I turn on my computer, it turns. I mean, you can switch that off, obviously, but don't assume that you fucking want to. I want you on every time I turn.
Dude,
my computer.
I saw that checkbox on the install. I was like, load Origin at start. No,
and it's just so unnecessary and stupid, and don't like just fucking. Go on Steam.
Is it going to be a Origin exclusive? Is that how kind of a
all the EA games
are going?
Yeah,
I have an Origin horror story. There's like this Camp Crystal Lake, and there's this little kid named Jason, and, and he
go on. All right, I want to get to your article in a second, Jeff. But I just you know, the Warcraft movie has a director now, and I know we're not a movie show, but. But it's Warcraft movie, and it, you know, it's Duncan Jones who's made a couple of really excellent movies in my opinion, Moon and what was his first movie? Oh shoot,
I liked Moon.
Moon is that his first movie?
Amazing.
I don't know.
I thought he did one more. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I so loved Moon. I so loved Moon.
Regardless of the director, and you know, it's a long way from being. It sounds like they really want it to be a 2015 release.
Okay,
so it could actually happen
this year.
Start filming this year. $100 million.
It'll be out
deal.
The same time as Star Wars Trek,
and Avengers 2, and Justice League, and there's a whole lot of stuff happening in 2015.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be geekgasm central. But you know, I don't want to talk about this director and yada, yada, yada. What I would like to talk about is the idea of a Warcraft movie in light of, you know, Lord of the Rings has a big film franchise and sort of defined the visual vocabulary for what medieval films look like. And now Game of Thrones has made that even more, I think, even more accepted in the mainstream of what you know, fantasy, gritty fantasy realism looks like. Fantasy realism being an oxymoron.
small Game of Thrones sidetrack. Somebody recreated, or a group of guys recreated King's Landing in Minecraft.
Oh, it looks awesome.
It is the fucking most ridiculous.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's out of control.
Anyway, we don't have any idea of what this is going to be about or what storylines is going to be or what characters are going to be. What would you guys like out of a Warcraft movie? I mean, I think I'm probably the biggest Warcraft fan here, maybe. I don't want to.
You are.
Yeah, okay.
Especially for the MMO.
Yeah, but I mean, I loved Warcraft as well. I loved the RTS.
Zerg.
I loved Warcraft 2, and I was okay at Warcraft 3.
But from a film perspective, like, do you want it to look like Game of Thrones? Do you want it to feel like a lived-in, or do you want it to feel more
You haven't
fantastic?
Looked at me sitting here slack-jaw, because since you said that, I've suddenly like had the realization of, oh, crap, I have no idea.
I don't want it to look like Game of Thrones. I want it to look more fantastical than that.
You want it to look like the Blizzard cutscenes.
That better be animated.
How do you do a torrent?
Yeah, exactly. It has to be animated.
I don't know how they do that, where there's that, how can there be that balance, but that's what I want. Best of luck. Here's $100 million.
Yeah, you know all those CG cutscenes you've been throwing at us for the past umpteen years.
I mean, I think it would be amazing. It's not going to happen, but I think it'd be amazing if the Warcraft movie's main character was an orc. Like, instead of being from the human perspective.
I think having an orc as a protagonist is an awesome idea.
It's a great idea, right? I mean, Shrek aside.
and Orc Vengeance, iOS game.
Right.
Plays an orc.
But
cool.
Oh, what did happen? Garnet's in a different place.
They can't be Tolkien-like orcs. They have to find a way to do... I think what you're putting in front of them is an impossibly difficult task.
Well, of course.
There's so much... I'm just trying to picture the first time a Tauren comes on screen.
It's going to have to be Avatar tech. It's going to be... I think
it's going to
be a lot of CGI
worlds. It's going
to
have to put Avatar tech
I mean,
down.
The other way to go is to do just the humans in Azeroth and have all those fantastical creatures beside... side bits
Boring.
And have it be the rise of the Lich King and the fall of his name, King Uther, Prince Arthas.
Arthas, yes.
Yeah.
I just do not envy whoever's making that movie, because there's no way that they can make they're going to please the entire planet.
Oh, man.
I mean, they're just going to get eviscerated regardless of what they do, regardless of how good it is. If it appeals to non-Warcraft players, they'll get eviscerated. If they, you know,
I mean, mob has been fantastical. You've got to do trolls. Yeah. You've got to do Taurens.
You don't have to. I mean, what I'm saying is, it could be kind of like Game of Thrones.
They should just do Stranglethorn. You can make a whole damn movie down there. It would be awesome.
There'll be blood elves. It's probably the easiest one to make. And they're the sluttiest looking.
I think you brought up a great point. I think you got an interesting debate for people to talk about.
It might not involve half the stuff in World of Warcraft. It could be literally humans versus orcs, like the beginning of Warcraft, and then you could build out in future sequels, theoretically.
Now, granted, there have been a ton of great video game movies in the past, but...
Right, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Countless.
Granted.
Couldn't count how many there.
Yeah, no, that's why it's scary. That's why that project, like, I would love for that to be awesome.
More JCVD, definitely.
Jean-Claude Van Damme?
That's what it needs.
More?
Yes.
My favorite Jean-Claude Van Damme quote, never in my life would I wear black silk underwears. It's from a movie. I don't know.
Have you seen JCVD?
No.
It's awesome.
Okay.
I'm not kidding. It's
awesome.
I do believe you. Genuinely good movie.
I do believe you.
Watch it.
All right.
JCVD.
Okay.
How about we do finishing moves?
Let's do it.
It's the weekend, and it's time for finishing moves.
All right. Let's get these things finished. I'm going to hop out real quickly with a iOS game that I've been playing over the last couple of days that I'm really curious to see how it evolves. A lot of you have probably already heard of it. It's called Clash of Clans. It is a twist on a very popular genre in the iOS world of a sort of like... Ville-like add-on game where you're constantly building resource gatherers. The resource gatherers gathers one resource that builds something else, and that builds something else. And then, oh, now you need to buy gems to advance. Yep. The twist to this game is that after a period of 2 days, your town that you're building can be attacked by other people asynchronously. Ooh. So you build up troops. You can send your troops to go attack other people's towns. Other people can come attack your towns. So you do have to do things like build your own defenses and build up an army so you can go and attack. I think that's kind of cool, but I'm wondering how I'm going to like it after my shield, which is called the shield lifts, which actually it's lifted while we're recording. So I have no idea whether I'm going to make
your city's decimated as we speak.
But and here's the piece that really concerns me about how well the game works long term is that none of the damage that people do to you is really detrimental because all your stuff magically pops back up. You'll lose some gems. You'll lose some of the mana juice stuff. You'll lose some gold. You won't lose your gems. You never lose your gems because that's the currency you buy. You'll lose some gems. You'll lose some of like the mana stuff that they steal from you, but all your things you built or whatever pop back up. So doesn't that sort of, I mean, I get it that they don't want to remove, they don't want people to be like, shit, I just lost everything. I'm never playing this game again, because then they're not buying anything.
Although I bet you there's an audience for that game too.
Like, for the tougher one.
For the really brutal, like, I better log my shit in and go, like, cause dude's grabbed me. I just went over and raided his stuff and totally, you know, I think there's definitely, but yeah, it's not a mainstream game that way.
And there's also a clan element, as you might have guessed from the name. So you're also able to join with others, create clans, and then clans can work with one another to both protect themselves. So it gives you some protection and also raid other people. So I'm interested to see how it evolves. Evidently, it's also sort of already really stratified hard to where like the top players have sort of become so good and have such heavily defensed cities that they're just sort of sitting up there at the top of the ladder and no one can touch them. It uses a trophy system to judge who can attack. So when you're, you know, when you're a really green noob, you have a very low trophy rating. So no one can come in and attack you theoretically. But what happens then is people who want to farm wins, they'll like go out and make weak attacks that they know they're going to lose, which drops their trophy rating. So then they can go attack people and farm them. So there's people are gaming the systems, but it's interesting. It's an interesting game. And I'm cool. I'm really curious to see what happens with the next. It's free to play. It's Clash of Clans. Yeah, there you go. Clash of Clans. And I also heard that Rad is really good. I got to look into that.
Is it Rad?
Rad. R-A-D. So that's what I'm looking into next. Jeff Mattis.
Yes. So two quick ones. Let's see. What was my first? Oh, yes. I have no idea. Well, what the hell was I going to say?
Jeff Cannata.
Dude.
I also have two quick ones. Now. My first quick one is I'm going up to a cabin this weekend for Alex Albrecht's bachelor party. And little plug, Alex will be on the show next week.
Because I'm not here.
Because you're not there.
Boo!
I'm so sick of all the cool people coming when I'm not here.
But the reason I mentioned it...
I'm here.
The reason I mention it is we are doing a completely...
awkward.
I know.
Completely... nerdy bachelor party, and I am we're gonna play Dungeons and Dragons while we're there.
At a cabin in the woods.
It's like the IT crowd when they get like the
however they are playing with strippers.
Yeah.
So that'll be
not really.
But
I am running the game for the first time. It'll be my first time as a dungeon master.
You will love it.
I'm
awesome.
So excited. I've written up a custom campaign for us.
Is it a sexy campaign?
No.
I mean, if you consider guys killing orcs and skeletons you're like sexy.
It's a campaign about some guy who's like about to throw his life away into a... Oh, is it really?
You got to have some kobolds in there.
There are kobolds.
Yes, of course.
There are kobolds. Anyway, so I only just mentioned that because I'm
going to
probably
stoked.
Talk about it next week. I want to tell my experiences being the computer in the role-playing game.
I can't believe I'm not going to be here next week.
I can't either, dude. Maybe you should cancel your trip. The other quick one is I was alerted to this by a friend of mine named Jack who told me about Press Pause. Have you heard of this? Press, P-A-W-S.
Oh, yeah!
It is a charity art show taking place on February 9th at the Gallery Nucleus from 2 to 8 p.m. And it's a charity to help local animal rescue. So if you're in the LA area,
it is
video game art that has animals in it.
Primarily video game dogs
and kitties.
And then when you buy them, it goes to help real dogs and kitties.
And it's the art is really adorable. It's really adorable. So I thought I'd mention it. It's total adorbs. This was me help. You know, I just wanted to mention this because I thought Nicole would get super jelly.
I'm going to that. I'll be there.
Yeah.
And so you're also
you
going
to meet
to
Nicole and you want to offer her to pump her out of
only
Jedi.
If you're a Jedi.
Sorry. Do you want to just, you know.
You'll have to prove you're a Jedi as
just
well.
Just prove you're a Jedi.
Please don't tempt the animals like that.
Anyway, no, but seriously, it seems like an awesome thing and I just wanted to mention it.
Yeah. Keep your lightsabers in your pants, folks.
Indeed. Yeah, don't embarrass yourself as I already have.
Yeah.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm finally ready and coherent. Big picture mode, I just wanted to say really quick that I finally brought it up on the show several weeks ago.
You first screened it? Yeah. Instead of second screened it?
No. But yes, thank you for, you know, legacy thank you to all the people that called me an idiot while offering me help. I appreciate it. It worked. I'm now up and running in big picture mode.
And?
It's awesome. It's awesome. I mean, my computer happens to be right next to my TV, so it's ain't no thing to hook it up. But
it ain't no thing?
Ain't no thing.
Little chicken wing.
The main finishing move, though, and I was going to go into this a little bit more detail. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. But there is an excellent, excellent, excellent article up on Eurogamer by Simon Parkin called How Video Games Fund Arms Manufacturers. I won't go into detail right now, but just suffice to say it's a very interesting breakdown. If you think about how other products are used in games, real world products are used by, you know, folks in games for advertising. It's basically the same thing, except it's a little bit shadier, it seems. There's a lot of money changing hands that you know, the general public isn't really aware of. Anyway, good write-up, worth a read. Maybe we'll talk about it in more depth at some point.
Nicole?
I kind of just wanted to brag a little bit.
Brag.
I'm going to a concert. It's all I really have to talk about is I'm going to a concert tonight. Sound City Players. And it's the reason it's a big deal because it's Dave Grohl and some of the Foo Fighters. And it's Chris Novoselic, the bassist from Nirvana. And it's the lead singer from Cheap Trick. It's Rick Springfield, Stevie Nicks, and John Fogerty. And I'm just kind of stoked.
Did you call him Fogerty?
Yeah.
So we got to get things wrapped up so we can get in tailgates so that she can get under. Okay, so she got to go. So. That's it, folks. Thank you, everybody. Next week, Alex Albrecht, Jeff Cannata, Jeff Mattis, and...
Mystery guest.
Ooh.
Whoa, that sounds awesome. I'll be at DICE. It should be interesting to hear what goes on there. J.J. Abrams and Gabe Newell doing the keynote. I will have lots of stuff to talk about when we get back. But you'll be gone that week, right?
I will, I believe, yeah. And I'll be in Barcelona.
Oh, no, the next week is the 14th.
Oh, I'll be here for that.
So we'll be here for that. Valentine's Day show, and then you'll be gone after that.
Romantic episode.
Yeah, it's going to be super romps.
All right, so lots of fun coming up. Wow, you guys are just like goofy today. Anyway, thanks for joining us. If you're sticking around, we do have a quick Super Bowl tailgate coming up. Otherwise, that's your weekend confirmed, and we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard. For me to see what was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish, she's ready. This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/weekendconfirmed. Folks, Super Bowl.
Last tailgate.
Dude, Jeff, this is all you,
looks
brother.
Like
your team.
We made it.
Your team in the Super Bowl. Congratulations.
Thank you. I would be more excited.
Jumping out of my skin.
You have no idea. I'm freaking out. I mean, 94 was the last time they were in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That it's been.
And they were bad for a long time after
bad
that.
Bad for a very long time. It's
great. Look, as a Cowboys fan, like, I actually, like, I'm like even more frustrated now that we just never let our team go completely to hell because it needs to go to hell. And then you come back and look at how good you are now.
Yeah.
You got great players. You got a great line.
This could be a few years of, I mean, that team's
not going anywhere.
Kaepernick stays healthy and playing like he is. And that defense stays healthy. We can really.
All right. So we know you're taking the Niners. Sell us on your team winning the Super Bowl.
6-0. San Francisco, I'm predicting it right now, 6-0 of a lifetime Super Bowl wins. We're going to establish the run hard. Hard. It's Al Gore. Frank Gore.
Al Green.
It's Al Gore. Al Gore from the backfield. Hillary Clinton on the wing. Our tight end is...
Yeah. Well, I got some global warming.
I think Frank Gore's going to have a lot of carries, and I think that, you know, I think the Baltimore is smart enough that they're going to prevent the run option from Kaepernick. I think it's going to be like the last game. I think it's going to be like the NFC Championship game where you're going to see Kaepernick passing more than he runs. And I think Rennie Moss is going to have a big day. I think Vernon Davis is going to have a big day. Rennie Moss, 4 catches, 100 yards. Right here. You heard it here first. And Crabtree is always going to be awesome. And I'm going to predict a final score, 14,007-6. Baltimore scores 2.
All right, what's your real, since we all have to do scores, what's your real score?
14,007. My real score is, I think it's going to be actually going to be a close game that's going to make me have a heart attack. I think it's going to be 31-24.
Yeah. All right.
Wow.
So, as the other like heavy football researcher, I'll just like counterpoint that. I hate having to pick one in this because no matter which way it goes, then people will be pissed to be like, "Oh, you cursed them." It's like, I can't curse any of these teams. I think here's the thing that I considered looking at this game is that both teams have been known for their defenses. And you have to start thinking about then which defense would you rather be this weekend? And I would way rather be the Niners defense going against the conventional Baltimore offense. You know, you got to stop Ray Rice. You know, you got to deal with some long threats. Yeah. And, you know,
they're not letting anybody get behind them.
Behind them. And then, you know what? If that means that I maybe let Bolden get underneath, then I control Bolden once he does come underneath. And I just don't let him go off on me. And the same thing with probably Pitta, who's the Ravens tight end. So you look at that package, that's deal withable. Now, if you're the Ravens side defense, number one, they've been super vulnerable up the middle to the run. So when you said hit the run hard early, I was with you. But then you said we're going to pass a lot. I don't think you're going to need to pass.
Really?
People have run all over the Ravens. And you've got a great running offense. And you've got a great mix-up misdirection of, like, who the hell has the ball? How many times have we watched in the last 9 games? Because that's the downside. I mean, if you go passing, you lose, I think. Because Kaepernick is only in his 9th freaking game.
10th. This would be his 10th
start. I'm sorry, his 10th game. Right, he's played 9 games.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It is crazy to come in as a Super Bowl favored quarterback, not even having been the starting quarterback
all season. He should be rookie of the
year.
I mean, even with RG3.
Even being second year.
Yeah, well, but yeah, I mean, 10th start, like.
I agree. So I think
if it was baseball, he would be a rookie. Considered a rookie.
You might throw some to Crabtree here and there. You might throw some. You might try and get a couple to Vernon. But man, that running offense, I think Ray Lewis's emotional lift isn't going to be able to take on that whole offensive line.
I agree.
And I think the Niners run game decides the game. And I can't even begin to think what the scores mean. I mean, I think that Baltimore will probably get a couple of scores in. Their passing offense has been looking really good. Flacco has been wacko, especially downfield.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say 24-17 Niners.
As long as it doesn't come down to a field goal, because Akers has been...
He's been a mess.
A mess.
He's been a mess.
After tying the record in the first game of the year.
He's been a mess. Ugh. But I don't see that. I don't see it transpiring that way. And I really do think that if it comes down to... I don't think the Niners would let it fall into passing, because Kaepernick right now, he's proved so dangerous with the read option, and so dangerous like picking his shots. Yeah, he threw 21 times last time out, but like he's just as dangerous with his feet.
I think they're Baltimore's smart to just put that extra man on the outside and make him like last week, or not last week, in the NFC Championship game, make him either hand it off or throw it. I think that's what they'll
do. Go back also and look at – one of the things I thought was really good that came this week is go back and look at how the Ravens had struggles with the Redskins. And same song, second verse, right? Yeah. They just could not handle that read option play. They didn't know what to do with it. And everyone's tried to study up on it. And maybe next year things will be different. But this year, like, no one's stopping it.
All right, guys. What do you think?
I'm going to go 27-20 Niners.
Love it.
No commentary.
Nope, that's it.
Because no one's going to be able to touch Nicole's commentary.
You guys are setting me up to set me up too much. But look, I'm going to keep this short because it's going to be simple. I think we have two teams that have kind of built their dynasty on defense, and we're going to see each side try to chip away at that wall with their offense. And I don't think that we're going to see a whole lot of surprises. I think that the defense is going to hold for the 49ers, and I think that they're going to take it 14-7. 49ers are going for the gold.
14-7. Wow, it is a defensive fight.
It's low scoring, but you know what? That's what happens when you have teams like this that have mastered their defense. And I feel like as great as they've been, and they obviously are, you know, at their prime right now, I don't feel like the offense is the best in the league.
First team to turn the ball over?
Ravens. Yeah.
Epic.
Yeah. You know, there's going to be some surprises in the maneuvers here, but I think when it comes down to actual scoring, we're not going to see very many points.
Interesting. And in a 14-7 game, I'm guessing the player of the Super Bowl, MVP of the Super Bowl, would have to be a defensive player.
Absolutely.
Like Patrick Willis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Defense. All the way. Big D!
That's actually not out of the question.
Yeah.
That's not out of the question at all. All right, well, we'll let the booth chime in. Here they are with their last picks of the season. Dave Del Rio maybe is going with... He's...
He's
going Ravens 28-24.
Of course he is. Of course he is. To the very last breath, he will be defiant.
And I know Mike is a Baltimore guy.
Were you making a...
Oh, he's going Niners 24-17.
So Del Rio stands alone in picking the Ravens. I think he made a deer antler spray reference of some kind.
I'm staying away from that.
What is that shit called? Deer antler extract or some shit?
What is that, like powdered rhino horn?
It's supposedly what A-Rod was doing. It makes you heal faster. Yeah.
That's what that was about?
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Can you get in trouble for that?
Yes. Yes, you can.
It's not a chemical, though, right?
The deer don't like it either.
The deer aren't happy with extracting their antlers.
All right, and for everybody else, you now have, 7 months
of no
tailgate.
No tailgate.
So there you go. Enjoy.
We should do it for golf.
We should do it for golf. Soccer.
That's not
a real sport.
But I hope everybody has a great Super Bowl weekend, enjoys a fantastic party, and we'll be back for sports.
Be safe.
Be safe.
Stay away from dips.
No, dips are the best part.
Yeah, not during flu season, man. Oh. You need to be on defense for your
guess
body.
Guess what? It's worth the risk. It's worth the risk.
We'll see.
7-layer dip, man. Just make one of the layers like penicillin.
Well, you just got to drink enough alcohol to kill the bacteria.
Exactly. Yeah.
None of these men are doctors, folks.
Obviously.
Damn it. How did you know?
I do play a healer.
Thank you.